as far as, you know, whether sex is always emotional or not, I think it's like, I often think of sex like music. You know, it can be a Bach toccata in a cathedral that makes you feel the presence of God, or it can be the Rolling Stones, you know, in a drunken party.
Yeah.
It can be everything in between. So I think, you know, people are wrong to think that sex is always sacred, or that
it can never be.
Or that, yeah.
But it has to be just an act of getting rid of your sperm.
Yeah, and, you know, you go to a Rolling Stones concert, that doesn't make you less appreciative of, you know, your choir in the cathedral, if you're into that. You know, it's possible to have different feelings for different things.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank. I'm Ari Shaffir. I'm recording this introduction at my lunch break in jury duty. I had to go back, and I am taking it on full on. I don't know if I said that last time, but I don't mind the experience. I don't want to do it a lot, but I've never done it before, so I figure F it. Plus, I heard that Doug Stanhope bit where he said to, where his advice was to, if you get a crime that is victimless, like marijuana possession, coke use, prostitution use, to just, no matter what the facts show, just say not guilty. Because you don't think he's guilty of anything. So that's what I'm going to do. If I pick up one of those charges, I'm just going to go for it. My plan was to do this during the actual jury duty, but it's impossible. So let me tell you about today's episode. I had on here our first PhD on the Skeptic Tank. I didn't even think of that. Yeah, it's the first PhD we've ever had. Chris Ryan, who wrote the book Sex at Dawn, talked to me about monogamy and just about the history of sex and relationships as it pertains to our most closely related animals in the animal kingdom and to other cultures across the globe. It was really interesting. It's interesting to see the differences between what we take societally, socially, and what our nature is. It seems like some stuff goes together, but a lot of stuff is just what he says are English roots holding us down. I thought it was all Jesus. I thought that's what everybody's so uptight about. It was all Christian stuff. And then he reminded me, no, what about Spain? They have Jesus, and they're fucking wild. So anyway, really good talk. I like that guy. He's cool. And then we talk about his TED Talks. It was just a cool talk. At the Comedy Store. We did it in the front patio of the Comedy Store. It was probably the loudest it's ever been, and it was still completely audible. Let me do some dates really quickly. And by the way, my special is still out, Passive Aggressive. It's on chill.com/Ari right now, or just go to my website, arithegreat.com, and you can pick it up for $5. The people who have seen it, thank you. All the compliments you gave me make me feel good about myself. Let's do some dates. So, San Diego, I got April 11th through the 13th at American Comedy Company. Washington State, I'm there for 4:20. For pretty much all over the place. I'm going to be at the Parlor at 4:20 in the afternoon, just outside Seattle, Bellevue, I think. And then I'm going to be in Olympia at the Urban Onion at 8 p.m. I'm taking the train or maybe going up. With some of the other comics. I'm not really sure how I'm getting from one spot to the next. But anyway, both those tickets are available on my website. Phoenix, May 9th with Joey Diaz at Stand Up Live. Oh, Austin for the Moon Tower Comedy Festival. That's the last weekend of April. And I'm doing a couple storyteller shows and a little bit of stand-up. And that's it. All right. And then May, almost all of May, I'm going to be in Phoenix. I'm going to be in New York City. So won't that be fun? I'm going back to Ontario. I did a pop-in set. Oh, by the way, Vancouver was so great. And so many heavy handshakes. I had so much weed by the end of the week. It was great. Thank you guys for being cool. I have the coolest fans. I just get weed. They're like, you cool here? And just some. Anyway, they tell me strains now. It's great. I have cool fans. But I had to go for press for that movie, for Inappropriate Comedy. I had to go to Toronto for a day. So I stopped into my favorite, one of my top five rooms in the world, Clandestiny, or it's called the Underground Comedy Club now. It's just a great pot room. Just a hot box pot room where you do stand up, and it's just built perfectly for it. Some of those rooms are just halls that they've converted. It's a nice theory. People smoke and watch, but this is like a nice fucking, it's set up right for a comedy room. Anyway, it's one of my favorite places to perform in the world. And I was there, Rory Scovel was there, the Lucas brothers were there, and James Adomian was there. It's like they have things where they just put together last minute shows of comics that are in town. And fuck, man, it's fun. I think Rory Scovel said he was going to try to get a week there. And speaking of, I am also doing a week there. So I think it's May 31st and then June 1st and 2nd. Wherever Thursday, Friday, Saturday is there. I'm going to do, I don't even know if it's for sale yet, but I'm doing three shows there. And then I'm going to go to London and Hamilton, those big cities that aren't the big cities, for a day each. And then back to Toronto, I think, for one more show at the Comedy Bar for part of some other thing. So yeah, I've got 5 days in Ontario. It should be cool. Right at the beginning of June and the last day of May. And then I'm going straight from there to Winnipeg for June 6th, 7th, and 8th. And then Shroomfest. Don't forget Shroomfest, my international mushroom festival, where people do mushrooms at some point over Shroomfest. This year falls out on the 22nd, 23rd, and 24th of June. So some point in that time, take mushrooms and have a great time. I am fucking blazed out of my mind right now on an edible. Those anti-Dolores edibles, if you ever get a chance to get one, whew, they're always good. The caramel corn is good. I'm on the pretzels right now. It makes Jury Duty way more exciting. And there's my other big announcement. Sorry. By the way, there's some, like, one or two hot chicks at Jury Duty. What's the protocol with going up to someone and saying hi? Like, they're probably only dressed up because they make you dress up for Jury Duty. I had this daydream in my head where I don't match my socks anymore. That's not the daydream. That's real life. I don't bother. Life is too short. So I just grab a sock, then I grab another sock, and then I put it on. But they have this dress code, and the judge can send you home or put you in contempt if you wear, a shirt that says guilty on it, which I have, which I thought of wearing. Some skateboard company. What a poser I am. I can't even do an ollie and I wear skate shirts. But that you can't wear shit like that. So my daydream was that what if the judge tells me that I have to wear my socks and I should change them. My daydream was that I'll take a stand. I'm like, no, fuck that, judge. That's ridiculous. Nobody cares. It shouldn't matter. And he's like, you're in contempt. I'm like, no, you're in contempt of reality. None of that matters anymore. And then I don't remember if he eventually saw the light or if I went to jail. Either way, it's just a daydream. That would never happen. But this is the date I wanted to say for you guys. April 9th, I am doing my next and my last, for a long time, storyteller shows in L.A. We are doing it for Comedy Central Digital. We're going to tape them. We're going to record them. So we're still booking the lineups and we're still figuring out exactly where. It's either going to be Cheetahs on in Hollywood on Vine and what is it? Vine and Hollywood, I think, or Vine and Sunset. Or this place called the Virgil. That's, I think, more downtown. I got to figure out what works best, but, we're taping them. Two different ones. I think the topics are going to be, I was so fucked up and I don't know the next one. It's either going to be sex or family or maybe just a best of different stories. So anyway, we'll probably do 7 and 9 o'clock, but save the date. Tickets aren't on sale yet, but they will be really soon. It's April 9th, so come. And then I'm moving to New York, so I won't be able to do one again until November here. So you should all come out to that. It'll be $5 or $10. They want me to do it for free and just give it out to random people. But I'm like, no, fucking charge a few dollars and let fans come. It'll be so much better. Anyway, let's start the episode. How about we do that? Fuck sponsors. Who cares? It's already at 8.5 minutes. All right, you guys. So here we go. Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank. Damn it. Is this 107 or 108? Fuck. I forgot. I think 108. But I'll tell you how jury duty went in the wrap up. Or probably I'll just wrap it up as soon as I'm done with this and then pretend. But so Chris Ryan, Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank, episode 108 with Chris Ryan. Sex Monkey. Yeah, that's a good name. Sex Monkey. Yeah, it's all about how we just fuck, like, and we're just, you know, no different than our nature. All right, enjoy, everybody. And sign up for, don't forget to subscribe to these. I'm on SoundCloud now, and Stitcher, and iTunes. Subscribe and tell a friend if you enjoy these. Spread the word, tell a friend. Brad, talk to you later. Bye. Enjoy the episode. Chris Ryan, here we go. Yeah. Sex Monkey. 108. I just start. I just go for a while, as long as I stay on topic. And then I do introductions later. You know how to use it, just keep them sort of close to your face. All right, nice. So, Chris Ryan, how are you?
Good. How you doing?
Thanks for meeting me here. Yeah, you have the same setup as this?
Same. Got the Zoom, two mics.
This is what Marin told me to get, when I started. He was like, let me show you. Yeah, it doesn't pick that shit up.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It'll register a little bit. Me and Joey Diaz were talking on a patio once, and there was a leaf blower. Like right below us. First, it was a guy raking cement, you know? How they always just rake when they should
nice
sweep.
Atmospheric.
Yeah, and then the leaf, we had to go inside because it was too loud, but it picked up fine.
Wow. So, do you tell your listeners where we are?
Uh-huh.
In downtown Hollywood?
The Comedy Store. Yeah,
beautiful.
Sometimes tour buses will come by, and that's pretty fun.
And they think we're famous?
Sometimes. We used to moon them when we sit inside there and write when we were starting. We were like, let's fuck around with them. And we'd sit there and just shove our asses against that window.
Nice, nice. Well, I just cut my hair, but until like a week ago, everybody thought I was Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Oh, really?
I was getting it constantly.
Because of the long hair?
Yeah, long hair and the glasses and, you know, slightly overweight, dorky white guy. It's just, in L.A., everybody thinks I'm Philip Seymour fucking Hoffman.
Do you think Philip Seymour Hoffman told his friends, like, yeah, I'm going to be an actor? And they were like, dude, you're not, like, you're not an attractive, like,
not a Brad Pitt actor.
Yeah. What are you thinking?
Character-driven.
Aren't most actors really hot? Like, you should think this out, dude.
Yeah.
And he was like, no, I'm a really good actor. And like, yeah, it's more to it than that.
All right, Phil. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been hearing about this book, Sex at Dawn. Should we just start this? Are you sick of talking about this stuff at all?
No.
I would get sick of it, I feel like, after a while.
Certainly not on podcasts. I mean, okay. I get a little sick of people who haven't even read the book, who send me emails, who want to argue with me. You know, that's always interesting.
Would you say you're wrong because of this?
Yeah, I don't want to complain. I'm really lucky that anyone's read the damn thing. But but you know, in terms of what I'm sick of, certainly not talking about it.
I had this. I had my throat was really bothering me a lot. Every weekend I was gone. By Saturday, it was just completely shot. I screamed too much out of my throat, not my stomach. I don't know how to talk, I guess. But my friend's wife is this homeopathic doctor, and she was like, here's what you need to do. And she gave me this throat spray, this honey throat spray. She goes, honey's a really good coating for your, and it draws liquids to your throat, which help. And she should drink hot tea and stay away from caffeine. I was like, okay. And I tried it, and after like a month, it was fine, and I'm totally good. And when I mentioned the word homeopathic, and everyone just was going, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Those people are quacks. And I'm like, what, honey? Just saying honey and drink tea, that's not... How's that... I feel better.
Yeah. Well, I mean, honey is the oldest antibacterial, antiseptic...
Really?
There is, yeah. Yeah, in fact, if you get a wound and you don't have any sort of, you know, medical remedies, you just put honey on it, and that'll keep it clean and uninfected.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, honey's amazing for...
What is pissing on a wound? Where does that come in?
Well, pissing, you've got uric acid, which will kill some stuff.
Okay.
And piss is actually completely, What is the word? Come on. It's sterile. Early. It's sterile. Thank
okay.
you. I couldn't think of the word sterile.
I do that all the time.
Yeah, no, piss is sterile. The best thing to do with piss, though, is piss on your toes in the shower, and that'll keep you from ever getting athlete's foot.
Athlete's foot?
Yeah.
I got it real bad now on my left toe. My
there
left
you go. Piss
toe.
On your toes, man. Actually, if you got it bad now, what you want to do is piss in a cup and stick your toe in the cup.
Just soak it for a while.
Soak it, yeah.
Until I get pruny and yellow.
Yeah, yeah. Piss is really good for your skin. If you look in, like... lotions, a lot of them contain uric acid.
Really?
Which is made from animal piss, so you might as well just piss on your own foot, you know?
Wow. Maybe that's why my skin is so soft around my stomach, because I used to be a bedwetter for so long and lie in my own piss every night.
What's this have to do with sex at dawn?
Nothing,
you
I
might
guess.
Ask.
Yeah. Here's what I'm going through my life recently. My friend right. Pete told me about this. He first started he got into watching... what's the kind of porn when somebody watches someone else bone their wife?
Oh, cuckold.
Cuckolding, yeah.
Yeah.
He got into watching it. He was really, like, interested by it because he was like, well, one, the cuckolding porn is weird because you're not the one getting embarrassed.
Does he have a hot wife? It's,
no, he didn't have any wife. But he was like, I get really hard for it. Yeah. Like, why? And he was like, I read something, and I'm pretty sure it must have been you. This was, like, years before I knew.
Yeah.
About how it's just like you just fight, your boner fights for dominance. I don't know a nice way to say the medical way to say it.
Yeah, yeah. The scientists call that penis fencing.
Penis fencing?
Yeah.
No, trying to stick up.
No, I'm joking. There is a term of penis fencing, but it refers to when two male bonobos cross swords, as it were. But they're not actually, what? It's not in conflict. They're sort of mutually masturbating by rubbing their penises against each other. Yeah. And the females do it as well. They call it GG rubbing, genital rubbing, where the two females will back up to each other and sort of like do a quick James Bond shimmy.
That's like South Park, scissoring.
Yeah, like scissoring, but without the actual scissoring happening.
They'll just rub muffs.
It's a muff rub, yeah. Exactly.
Just a basic muff rub. The regular stuff. What I'm going through in my life right now is that I'm just sort of done with monogamous relationships.
Uh-huh.
And I'm stuck having to justify it constantly because those seem like the standard.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny how it's the ideal that very few people can live up to, and yet it continues to be the ideal.
Yeah. And I talk about this in my special and stuff, where it's like everyone gives you this version of happiness. It's like, you know, you get a wife and you get a couple kids and everyone's happy. And you're like, right. But you're ignoring... I see my friends not being happy. Sometimes, yeah, there they are.
There's the tourists. We've got a tour bus just pulled up. They're
totally
all staring at us, wondering who the fuck we are. I'm not Philip Seymour Hoffman, ladies and gentlemen.
Philip Seymour Hoffman started as a comedian. He's back.
With a haircut. I lost a little weight. A little weight.
Oh, yeah, you really do look like him now. When I turn my head, and I... Philip Seymour Hoffman. I don't know, we got a whole tour bus of little kids coming to see you.
Beautiful, beautiful. I was great in Magnolia, huh?
It really was great in Magnolia.
All right, so monogamy. You're having trouble with monogamy. Yeah.
I'm just having trouble with everyone looking down on me and being like, well, come on, you can't be happy.
Yeah.
Not being with one person.
Yeah.
And I just keep pointing back to, like, it doesn't feel like I have to do that.
Yeah. Well, lucky you. I mean, I think we're in a... historical period where you don't have to do that for the first time in a long time.
Yeah.
You know? I think things are opening up really quickly in the sexual realm, largely thanks to the gay rights movement.
Whoa, what do you mean?
Well, I think that, you know, the gay rights movement has been fighting hard for 3-4 decades now to have sexual relationships that aren't based on reproduction be recognized as legitimate and valid.
Oh, so that bleeds through, you think?
I think it does in a, you know, not to give any ammunition to the right wing, but I think in a sense they're right by saying, hey, if we let two men, you know, marry, then what's going to happen? Then the whole thing breaks down. Well,
yeah.
It does start to break down, and it should break down because it's an unlivable, for most people, it's an unlivable ideal, for not for everybody. I think that monogamy... an impulse toward monogamy exists on a spectrum, just like, you know, the Kinsey scale of straight to gay. You know, most people are somewhere in the middle, right? I think that it's the same thing with monogamy. Some people find monogamy absolutely impossible, and others find it absolutely essential.
Yeah.
And most of us are somewhere in between, and we fluctuate throughout our lives.
Yeah, I was just telling something about that Kinsey scale, that 0 to 6, like 0 being a complete heterosexual and 6 being a complete homosexual.
Right.
But he was like, nobody's a 0 or 6.
Yeah.
Everyone's a 0.5 or a 5.5 or inwards.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, even the most heterosexual, I consider myself to be extremely heterosexual, but, and I'm not homophobic at all, as far as I can tell, or my gay friends can tell.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, you watch porn, you know, you're watching a guy.
Yeah.
And it's proven that by eye tracking software that heterosexual men spend most of their time looking at the guy's dick.
Really?
Yeah.
What, to compare it, to see where they rank?
Or, well, maybe. Or maybe arousal. It's just that that's the focus of their attention, whether it's their own dick or someone else's dick, you know?
Yeah, the problem is it's so societal to say, don't accept that. Don't accept that you could be.
Right.
That I'm stuck. When I used to start watching porn, using it for a purpose, you know?
Right.
Anytime a guy, like the long shot of the guy, if it was more than 5 times, I'd be like, oh, come on, get off. I can't jerk off to this. I have to, like, stop
right.
and not hold my dick because I'm right. so afraid of, like, this could be construed by nobody's around.
You know, hopefully.
As gay.
Mom!
Yeah. Get out! Nobody knocks.
Well, I just saw a comedian recently who was talking about this, and he said, yeah, you know, when you jerk off, you are holding a dick in your hand.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, let's face it.
Yeah, it might be Rogan. You had a bit sort of like that.
It could have been, yeah.
Yeah, but I saw the gays marching down here after they took away the right to vote in California.
Yeah, right.
They all marched down here one night, and we all watched them. I felt really bad.
Not the right to vote. The right
no,
to
not the
marry.
Right to vote. Yeah, I'm still trying to get that away from
Proposition
them.
Proposition 8, yeah.
Yeah. And it was just like, oh, wait, they were allowed to marry, and now suddenly they're not.
Right.
And I just felt really bad. And I felt like we're California. We're supposed to be the ones leading the charge on everything. On
well,
the environment.
You know who paid for that?
Mormons.
The fucking Mormons.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, they're the worst.
Who, you know, ironically, are the sort of are radicals in terms of marriage.
Yeah, they go against regular marriage.
Right. Yeah.
But, when I started getting into more discussions about it because of that, it started hitting me. I was like, wait, this is kind of wrong. And people were saying, like, well, you know, if they get married, how could they can't have kids? So that's not right. But I was like, but what about a heterosexual man and woman who don't want to have kids?
Right.
Should they not be allowed to get married?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I just spoke at TED last week.
Really?
I gave a big TED talk.
Oh, fuck yeah, man.
Yeah,
congratulations.
It was an interesting experience. And the essence of my talk was that human sexuality is not about reproduction. Reproduction is a rare byproduct of human sexuality. Most mammals, people don't realize this, but most mammals only have sex when the female's ovulating.
Only do it.
Yeah, so only when she's ovulating. So, because think about it, sex is risky, right? You're humping somebody in the bushes, a leopard hears you,
you're prone.
And it's a 2-for-1 special, right? I mean,
yeah.
And you're not even looking out.
Sharks almost die when they have sex.
Oh, do they?
They have to stop swimming.
Oh,
no, they have to swim and get the current to come through them, and they have to like just float, and then they start to drown.
Wow.
They start to not be able to breathe.
Wow. It's rough.
Yeah.
Although,
that's what happened to the NXX
guy. I don't have
a
lot of sympathy for sharks, you know.
They're always killing everybody.
The shark fin thing is kind of disgusting. But anyway, the point is that most mammals only have sex when the female's ovulating. And so the ratio of sex acts to birth for, like, gorillas is, like, 15 to 1 at most. Right? Humans, it's about 1,000 to 1. I'm talking before birth control.
Sex acts to?
To birth.
Okay.
Yeah. So you calculate how many, you know, sex acts people have in hunter-gatherer societies where sex is much less regulated than in our society.
Mm-hmm.
Divide that by how many kids they have, and you end up around 1,000 to 1.
Wow.
With chimps and bonobos, our two closest related primates, it's about the same ratio. But then you get to gorillas, which is the next most closely related primate, you're down to 15 to 1.
15 sex acts for one.
Right. Right. Because they only have sex when the female's ovulating, which is only a couple days per menstrual cycle.
So when they're in heat. They can smell them in heat
exactly.
And they say now they want to, that turns them on.
Right. So human sexuality has like a huge importance. Our sex is, our attention to sex is way off the scale of mammals in general. And we're just talking about sex acts, right? We're not talking about thinking about sex and talking right. about sex and remembering sex and planning sex, you know, and all the other. It's, you know, the amount of time we spend with sex is huge.
Oh, yeah. It's the number one thing that holds me back in my career. It's like, I need to put time towards
yeah.
that.
Yeah, yeah. Although it probably propels you into
probably
career
too.
As well.
Yeah. It's like it makes me like I this is why I'm writing new jokes so yeah, that I can get
exactly.
laid once in a while.
Be on stage and get that yeah. that groupie attention. Yeah.
And yeah. so you think we have sex not for the act of reproduction then?
Right. We have sex. Human sexuality, what we argue in Sex at Dawn is that human sexuality is functions to establish and maintain complex social networks. Which is what our species does better than any other species, right? Yeah. And so it's like grooming behavior. You often see in, you know, Jane Goodall specials or something, the chimps grooming each other. And so primatologists always look at who grooms whom to try to figure out dominance hierarchies and all that kind of stuff. And that's how sexuality functions as well. It fulfills a social function. It enables us to live in social groups with multiple males. Think of there are 300 and some species of primates.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And many of them live in complex social groups with multiple adult males.
Okay.
None of them are monogamous. Not one.
None of them?
None of them. Right. Okay. Except us, if you believe the myth. Gorillas, which are harem-based society, have one adult male. What happens is the selection takes place on the level of the individual male. So the males fight.
For dominance.
For dominance. The one who wins, the silverback, expels the others from the group, and then he takes over the females, and he's the only one who fucks those females, right?
And he gets to fuck all of them.
He fucks all of them, right. Now, what happens then is because the selective pressure is on the individual male, you get the biggest, strongest males passing their genes on, right? Because he's the one who wins generally. So the males over time evolve to be about twice the size of the females.
Wow.
Right? And you find this in most harem-based mating system. What's that?
Do wolves do that too?
Wolves are a different system. Wolves have a dominant pair. They have a dominant couple in the pack. And I'm not an expert on wolves. I'm more into the primates.
Okay,
but,
close to us.
But like walruses, yeah. You know, you'll find the male is twice the size of the female.
And they grow bigger because of their dominant.
Because, I mean, it makes sense. The biggest, strongest guy generally wins. He pushes the other guys out.
Same thing happens
at
bars.
Well, it depends on the bar. Bear bars, maybe.
Well, oh, yeah. But I'm saying there's some sort of dominance. Either they'll be the funniest one, or they'll be the...
Well, yeah.
They'll cut the legs out from their friends the best.
Right. The cock blockers.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, pass on their genes. Although we're not sure if they're cock-blocking genes. That's another... Anyway, so what happens, just to finish this gorilla thing. So you got the selection taking place on the body, right? So you get the biggest, strongest males, so they get to be twice the size of the females. Meanwhile, there's no selective pressure on the genitalia, because he's the only one fucking those females. So the gorilla penis is the size of your pinky finger.
Because it doesn't have to be big.
Because it doesn't have to be big, because nobody else is fucking them. There's no sperm competition. And his testicles are the size of kidney beans. They're tiny little testicles.
Really?
Whereas on the other end of the spectrum, you got chimps and bonobos and humans who have sperm competition because multiple males are having sex with females in any given menstrual cycle.
Multiple males are having sex with that same female.
Right. So she's banging different guys in any month. So there's competition between sperm cells.
Explain what that means.
It means that if you and I both have sex with the same woman,
yeah,
our sperm are competing,
not to see you and me.
Who
gets to impregnate her? Who
right.
gets to,
you
genes
and I,
get to move
you
on.
And I can hang out and be friends because
right.
we're both getting laid, right? Whereas in gorillas, you don't have two adult male gorillas hanging out being friends. That's why you don't have complex social groups in gorillas, because the males are always fighting.
Right.
Whereas in chimps and bonobos and humans and dolphins, all of whom share the same sexual traits, you've got complex social groups with multiple adult males. We can hang out and be friends because we're all getting laid.
Huh.
Right? So what happens is the Darwinian selection takes place within the female's reproductive tract. That's called sperm competition.
And that makes you have bigger penises and bigger balls?
In our case, we have the longest, thickest penis of any primate, and our testicles are outside our body, and we produce about 200 to 300 million sperm cells per ejaculate.
I thought our testicles outside our body because it was too warm inside our bodies.
Right, but But the reason the coolness is important is that it preserves the sperm cells. In the book, we say having an external scrotum is like having a special fridge in the garage just for beer.
Yeah.
Right? If you've got a beer fridge in the garage, you're a guy who expects a party to happen at any moment, and you need to be prepared, right?
Yeah.
That's what your external testicles are.
Like, I need access to the sperm right
it's
now.
Like, hey, baby, anytime, any moment, you got some cold beer ready to go. That's what the external testicles are. So that's why, you know, when you were 15, you could come five times in a day. That's completely unnecessary and impossible for most mammals. Because they would never have to come five times.
They wouldn't have to. They would just, they would reproduce and they'd be done.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why my, Pete, that's what he was telling me. He was like, that's why you get harder when you watch another guy bone your wife. It's because your dick is now saying, oh, I got to compete. I got to put my sperm in there.
Right. Well, there's some really interesting research that shows that, let me see if I remember this. Okay, you've got a couple. When the woman has been out of the man's sight for more than 24 hours,
okay,
so she's gone to a conference or whatever, he just hasn't seen her for a while.
Yeah.
The next time they have sex, he will thrust harder, deeper.
When he hasn't seen her.
When he hasn't seen her. And you know, you can say, well, that's conscious on some level, but on a completely unconscious level, his testicles will produce more sperm cells than if he has seen her in the last 24 hours.
Wow, really?
So the idea is that what's happening is there's an evolutionary function where his body is saying, hey, she might have fucked somebody else. I better get a lot of my boys in there and flood the zone. Sperm competition.
And that's whether or not he's seen her, not whether or not how many times he's masturbated or ejaculated.
Right. It's that he hasn't seen her.
Wow.
Yeah.
And would that work, too, if you haven't seen, like, any woman? Or is that just about their mate?
I don't know. I mean, it's a good question, actually. It's been years since I read the study, but my memory is that it was about couples. So it was comparing his sperm production on typical days versus if he hasn't seen her for a while. And I do remember that it didn't matter whether he had ejaculated or not in the meantime. So if he'd masturbated or whatever.
It would still be more. That's so interesting because every time you do it with a woman, there's this weird thing where if you don't use a condom or if you just, you know, if you let your stuff go, whatever, they sort of get proud if you have a larger load of semen. I've never quite understood that. It's like, it's not, we're done, first of all. It's more to clean up. But they feel like they drew more out of you or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is, yeah.
It's love by the gram. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess so. Do you think that's linked to, like, on their side as well, where it's like they're trying to get the most baby-making juice?
I don't know.
Have you noticed that at all, or is that just me?
Yeah, maybe.
Just a moment of like, oh, yeah, it was a lot that time. And I want to be like, that has nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
But maybe it is.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's come up a lot in my post-coital conversations.
Maybe it's just me then.
Maybe you're you're a sprayer.
Yeah, maybe. Duncan was talking about it. He has ball cancer, and he had to lose the testicle. And so he was afraid he wouldn't be able to ejaculate anymore.
Right.
And I was like, dude, that's the best case scenario.
Yeah.
It's just, like, you don't want kids right now, and it's just gross.
Fire blanks.
Yeah. It's just disgusting.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't think that would have any effect. It's the prostate gland.
Yeah, I know.
That he needs to worry about. Yeah. Yeah. No, in fact, he said he...
It's fine. He was just worried about it for a little while.
Harder or something. Didn't
really?
He? Or maybe that's just relief. Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
He did say he got his first boner and he got so excited after the surgery because he just wasn't thinking about stuff at all. And then when he got it, he's like, yay, yeah. It still works.
Yeah.
Elton John said he was happy about being, the only positive thing about being in the gay community is that there was no pressure to have children.
Right.
They were just not part of that community. Whereas
the only positive thing? What about getting laid at the drop of a hat?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe he said the most positive thing.
Yeah, the most positive.
And then he ended up having a kid anyway, but... It would be nice not to have to worry about it.
Yeah. Well, you could just get a vasectomy, man.
Yeah, I'm thinking about that.
Yeah.
I always think about that.
It's pretty easy.
You gotten one?
No, my dad got one.
Really?
After I was born, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I actually went to a doctor when I was in college to get one.
Yeah.
And the doctor, he was a really cool guy. He was a, I remember him as being an old guy. I don't know how old he actually was, but I remember him saying, you know, asking me why I wanted one and sort of having this conversation. And then he said, you know, you're 20 or whatever I was. And he said, life changes, things change, you know, you shouldn't do this. So wait, do me a favor, you know, wait, and just wait and come back in 3 or 4 years and I'll do it for free. And I was like, yeah, right.
That's the only reason I don't get one is because, like, I know my mind changes sometimes.
Yeah. Mine never did, though, on that.
Really?
You know.
And you still haven't gotten one, though?
No. I mean, now I'm 52. 52?
Really?
Am I 52? Yeah, I
you
think
look
I'm
good, dude.
Yeah, thanks. Like Philip Seymour Hoffman, man.
Yeah. It looks good, too. You live that life. That's like the Hoffman life.
I'm going to start showing up at parties. Philip Seymour Hoffman is here.
Have you ever tried that?
No.
You should do that.
No. Well, I never thought I looked like Philip fucking Seymour
Hoffman. It's only in certain lights. You could say you're his brother.
Yeah.
He definitely passes that.
Yeah.
You should say you're his brother and your name is Chris Seymour Hoffman. You should have both those names. And you're like, no, that's our full last name.
I'd prefer to be Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah. What do you think? Well, I've heard this comparison a lot to animals.
Uh-huh.
And the only thing that it doesn't quite ring completely like fine in my head is that we're not animals.
Oh,
you know what I mean? We're slightly different.
No, we are
animals.
But
there's things we overcome that our animal instincts on. Like, let's say I'm attracted to my boss's wife.
All
and
right.
She's attracted to me on an animal instinct level,
uh-huh.
The chemical level.
Right.
My human side says this will be bad for me.
Right.
I should just walk away.
Right.
And I have the ability to just walk away.
Right. So what I generally say is we are apes. We may be a particularly interesting ape, a particularly complex ape, but we are apes. The German philosopher Schopenhauer put it very well. He said, we can do what we want, but we can't want what we want. So you can control the fact, you can decide not to fuck your boss's wife.
Yeah.
But you can't decide not to want to fuck your boss's wife.
Right, that's not up to
right?
you.
So that's the acceptance of our animal nature, right? You are going to want to do that, whether you feel guilty about it or not. Oh, by the way, there's a new pope.
Oh, they got one?
Yeah, the white smoke started billowing.
Why do they still use white smoke to get the word out?
Tradition.
How irrelevant are they?
Tradition, yeah.
Fuck tradition. That was the best way to get the word out then. That's the only, it's not tradition. It was
smoke
it was
signals.
Their Twitter.
Maybe it's an homage to the American Indian.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we overcome things or we override our instinctive impulses, but there's always a price to pay for that. Whether it's in shame, guilt, physiological trauma, psychological trauma, stress. You know, like, for example, if you don't get enough sleep, you suffer. Now, you could say, well, I don't have time to sleep. I'm an important human being.
If you get cranky, your mind doesn't work as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and you have serious health effects.
Uh-huh.
You can choose to wear shoes that are the wrong size.
Yeah.
You know? But your feet are going to hurt because you are an animal. So diet, exercise, stress level, sleep, all these things are animal necessities. So when people say, oh, we're not animals, sure we're animals. You sleep, you shit, you eat, you're an animal.
And the shame is a negative effect too. That's what you're
right. Shame is the way society gets us to override some of these animal instincts.
Yeah, I was talking to my friend about this. When I was 14 or 13 or 15, and I was jerking off constantly, but before I really knew what it was or that everybody did it, I would just do it and then feel horrible, feel like I was degenerate and I would never be part of society.
Right.
But what I was doing was like my body saying, yeah, just do that right now, just do it.
Yeah, your body's saying you got sperm cells that are backed up, you got to get rid of them so that you keep the fresh ones in the fridge. You know, it's like cycling the old beer out of the fridge because it's expired, right?
Drink those first.
Yeah. I mean, it's a completely natural thing. So society tells you it's shameful, it's disgusting, whatever. They got a hook in your mouth. That's the way. And the Catholics, you know, speaking of the Pope, are the worst. You know, look at them. Look at what happens.
They're breeding child molesters by not letting them.
Exactly.
Just express
by not letting them be sexual beings, telling them God, you know, is watching and hates you. And
what percentage of priests do you think are gay or have alternative sexual ideas?
Well, I think it fluctuates historically. I think that for a long time, if you were a gay man, pretty much the only things, the only routes open to you were either completely lie about it and marry a woman anyway, mm-hmm. and just have a weird,
which a lot of people do,
bizarre marriage, or join the priesthood. So I think that the priesthood was sort of a...
where God would let you cover up these feelings, because like, well, he told me not to have sex, so perfect, now I don't have to face it.
Well, and you get to wear fancy dresses and, you know, silly hats and all that, and...
Yeah, so, express yourself that way. Have like these weird uniforms. Why are they still wearing this? I see those people at the conclave, and I'm like, what are you still wearing?
I know.
It's so ridiculous.
I saw one the other day. I saw something on TV, and they did you see the guards in the Vatican?
No.
They look like clowns, man. I mean, they've got the puffy short pants and polka dots and like big feather hats. And like, I mean, what is going on? How do you not see how silly you guys look? But I mean, I don't know. What I see
guys
walking around.
That's all gay people designing those.
Probably. It's probably. I mean, yeah.
I used to have a joke about when people say, like, gay is a new thing. I'm like, no, it was always around.
Oh,
and they said, like, Vikings, which are seem like the most non-gay group. It was always like, someone designed the hats. That fur with horns coming out, that wasn't a fucking Viking. He wasn't worried about what it should look like.
Yeah. And they're probably always getting caught on things. You know?
Yeah.
They're walking under a tree. Oh,
you're not headbutting people.
Hat.
Why do you have horns? What is that?
Exactly.
You're trying to go to the horde and all of a sudden.
Really,
yeah.
Viking fashion. There's a concept. I like that.
Yeah. Was I just going to tell you? I had some questions about this stuff.
Yeah, I had
how
a,
much? What?
No, I was going to say something about the Vikings and the gay thing, but I can't. All these tour buses are distracting me.
Are they really? Sorry. The point is, like, I don't mind them out here because they, like, break stuff up.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But if it's distracting, it sucks. How much do you think, there's any benefits to monogamous relationships?
Sure. You know, what I say in presentations and, you know, interviews and stuff is that essentially what we're arguing in Sex at Dawn is that our ancestors were sexual omnivores. Right, we're attracted to variety in our sexuality, just like we are in our food and our music and comedy and, you know, all sorts of things. We're intelligent beings, and intelligence leads to an appreciation of variety.
Yeah.
So, but to argue that our ancestors were sexual omnivores is not an indictment of monogamy. Just as to argue that our ancestors were dietary omnivores is not an indictment of vegetarianism.
Right.
You can choose to be a vegetarian. I can't believe that doesn't come out. It really doesn't.
You'll just hear it way in the background.
I can't even hear myself. That's incredible. All right, anyway.
That's shocking. I had to listen to that first Diaz one. I was like, wow.
Anyway, so the point is that you can choose to be a vegetarian, right? And it can be ethically superior. It can be very healthy. It can be great in so many ways. But just because you've decided to be a vegetarian doesn't mean bacon suddenly stops smelling good.
Right.
Right? So if you go into this knowing, like, okay, I'm going to be monogamous. My partner and I have talked about this. We both agree to this. We both understand that it's going to be challenging because of the sort of animal that we are,
mm-hmm.
that we're going to desire other people, but we're just choosing not to do that. Then you've got a much better chance of success than if you believe this bullshit that if you love somebody, you'll never be attracted to anyone else.
Yeah, like, what are you talking about? We all know that's true. And most people either break up or definitely cheat.
Right.
The percentages of women, too, that have cheated.
Or they don't talk about it at all. Like, we were just talking about having kids, right?
Yeah.
I can't imagine going into a long-term relationship with somebody without having that conversation, you know? I mean, unless she's 50, you know? But if you're hooking up with a woman who's 25, you got to talk about whether you want to have kids, right? So, when I say hooking up, I mean, like, forming a relationship. So I think it's the same thing. If you're forming a relationship with someone, you got to have the monogamy conversation. Because, you know, maybe the dude is that's essential. He's completely into it. And the woman is thinking, yeah, there will be some flexibility down the road. Well, maybe there won't. You got to have that conversation early.
Yeah, that's what I try to do.
Yeah.
And it seems like it's usually an issue because societal stuff has been played so much a part where people go like, well, I could never do that. I'm like, you're not even considering it.
Right.
You're not really letting yourself consider it.
You know, there are a lot... I get a lot of emails from people, and a lot of the emails are from guys saying, dude, I completely resonate with this. I think you're right, but there are no women that would understand this. And then I get a lot of emails from women saying, God, I wish there were men who could understand this, because that's exactly how I am.
So what do you think? People just not talking?
I think it's like homosexuality in the 50s. I think everybody's like in the closet. And so it's hard to identify one another. So what I've done is, with a friend, we've set up sort of a web-based community site. It's called Kotango, KOTANGO.com, where it's a site for ethical non-monogamy. Yeah. So it's a place where people who are open to this sort of thing can meet and have conversations.
Ethical non-monogamy.
Ethical non-monogamy. It's sort of the anti-Ashley Madison, you know, which is the cheating site. So this is like, if you're lying to your partner, fuck off.
Yeah, to me that seems more harmful and damaging to them on an emotional level. They're just saying, like, I'll just be honest with you.
Yeah,
I'm going to be having sex. I had an open marriage for a while, for a few years.
Yeah,
and people are like, oh, so you cheat all the time? I was like, no, I never cheat.
Right.
I tell her when I'm going to do it and when I have done it.
Yeah.
We tell each other. So there's no having to search for their email password to try to find out what they were up to.
Right. Yeah, that's intimacy,
yeah.
Right? And if you're lying about your sex life, where's the intimacy?
Yeah, how are you being completely like honest with a person and completely knowing them?
Right. Right, and and it's like not telling them your STD status or something. They don't know what's going on, you know? They may think they do, but they don't. And you know what? You probably don't either, because the basis of the relationship is false. So... Yeah, I mean, polyamorous, I'm sure you've heard this, polyamorous often say that they're doing the same thing everyone else does, they just don't lie about it.
They just don't lie, yeah. Yeah, it's really what it is. The percentage of marriages that have cheating, it's like, what? You guys are lying to me. You're saying you would never work in my situation, but you're in my situation.
Right. Yeah, you just don't recognize it. Yeah, it's a strange thing. Who was I talking with about this very recently? Somebody who's given me a hard time and it was Laura Ingraham on Fox News.
Uh-huh.
I was doing an interview with her.
She's super Christian, right?
Oh, she's nuts. Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know if she's nuts, but she's you know, one of these right-wing blondes on Fox. And she was giving me a hard time about
it. It's tough to talk to them, right?
Huh?
It's tough to talk to them.
There's
no jumping off ground.
Yeah, yeah. But she's unmarried.
Oh, really?
So it was weird because, you know, she was saying, well, you've been married 15 years. You must know something I don't. I'm not married. And I was like, yeah, I do know something you don't. But anyway, she was arguing. I said something about half of marriage is ending in divorce, and she was giving me a hard time about that. And I said, look, if half our airplanes fell out of the fucking sky, don't you think we'd redesign airplanes? You know, we wouldn't keep churning out the same damn
airplanes. Yeah, it's a 50% failure rate, and we keep saying, yeah, keep going.
Keep going. That's the way it's got to be. Yeah.
Instead of rethinking the whole situation.
Right, right. So there's huge cultural resistance to dealing with this. And getting back to where we were earlier, what I was saying is that I think the gay rights movement has done a huge service to the heterosexual community by forcing this discussion of what are relationships for. What are they about? They're not about having babies, because, as you said, lots of heterosexual couples don't have babies, don't want to have babies, or can have babies. That doesn't mean that they don't have the right to marry. Marriage is a cultural institution that we have made, we've connected to
so
things like...
So important that we have...
Well, it's economic. You know, hospital visitation rights, inheritance, all this kind of stuff. That's what marriage is.
Cheaper taxes.
Visas. You know, in our case, I'm married to a Portuguese. I have an American passport, and we live in Spain, right?
Oh,
we
really?
Couldn't do that if we weren't married, you know?
Yeah.
So there are all sorts of things to consider with marriage that have nothing to do with sex, much less reproduction.
And they've all gotten tied in together.
Right. And marriage is essentially an economic institution from the beginning. It's about, you know, if you read the Old Testament,
Yeah.
Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, right? That seems to be a commentary on respecting your neighbor's relationship. But if you read it in context, it goes on, nor his house, nor his ox, nor his slaves.
Just nor leave his belongings alone.
Exactly. Keep your hands off your neighbor's shit, is what they're saying. And the wife is just one
of
element.
Things. Yeah. Well, you have to buy, in Old Testament, you have to buy the wife from the
sure.
the family.
And that still happens in lots of the world right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why if the wife is raped, she's worthless.
She's worth less.
Yeah. Or not even the wife. If a woman is raped before marriage, worthless.
Do you know what they have in the Old Testament? If a woman gets raped, a non-married woman gets raped, the rapist, as his punishment, has to marry that woman.
Right.
Because she won't be worth as much. You can, like, unload right. her on somebody else. No mention of, does this girl want to marry her rapist?
Right.
That's not even thought of at all. It's just like, nah, you'll get somebody.
Well, that's the origin of the honeymoon, too.
What?
That the guy would take the woman
yeah.
and escape.
Escape from the...
From the family for a period of time. And then it's like, oh, now it's too late. We've got to let him marry because, you know, he's been fucking her for... Yeah.
They also have in Judaism, in terms of like when you say you haven't seen somebody in 24 hours and your sperm count goes up, they have a period of about 7 days after periods. That you can't have sex with a wife. You can't sleep in the same bed with her.
After menstruation.
Yeah. So with
that's half a month.
Yeah. Wow. And as soon as that period is over, so you have, as soon as you start bleeding, that's all off time. And then you have to wait 7 clean days without any spotting or anything. Right. Then you go to a ritual bath. So talking about another day.
Right.
And then you're clean. And then you can have sex. And that's when you're the most fertile.
Exactly. That's when you're ovulating.
And that's when you just want to fuck.
Yeah. Well, and that's when she's ovulating
yeah.
too. So that's, yeah, that's a setup to...
It's set
create
up
create as
for,
much pregnancy as possible, yeah.
Which they do. They love breeding.
Yeah. Well, it's the same thing in the Christian tradition, right? Sex should only
have?
Be for reproduction.
Yeah. You but know? We don't have that anymore because we have the pill,
yeah.
and girls don't have to. We both know we're not, like, especially out of marriage, we're not. We're doing this intentionally not to have kids.
You know that the pill, you know why the pill still allows women to menstruate?
Why?
Because the guy who invented the pill was Catholic.
Ah.
There's no medical reason for women to menstruate when they're on the pill. They could just bypass it completely.
What?
Yeah. But that 7 day thing where there's no estrogen at all is because the guy John something, I can't remember, John Rock or something like that,
yeah.
who invented the pill was Catholic and he...
So he said go off it for 7 days?
Yeah. So that meant the continuation of menstruation even when you're on the pill is just because that guy had there was a great article about it in the New Yorker years ago. People can google New Yorker. It is like John something, John Rock's error or something like that is the name of the
wow.
article. Yeah.
And that's the only reason they still menstruate.
Yeah.
That's the worst part of being a female also, just bleeding.
Well, one of them. And you know, along those same lines, here's something a lot of people don't know, talking about prehistory and all that. In prehistory, because people were having sex all the time, right?
Yeah.
So when a woman started ovulating, she would get pregnant within a year or two. And then she has the baby, and then she breastfeeds for a few years, 3, 4, 5 years, typically, among hunter-gatherers. And, you know, then she would stop breastfeeding, then she'd start ovulating again, and again in a year or two, she'd get pregnant again, right? So... If you look at a woman's reproductive life in the prehistoric periods, she would only menstruate 60, 70 times in her life because all that time she's breastfeeding, she's not ovulating, so
oh,
she's
right.
menstruating. Whereas now women ovulate 200 to 300 times
wow.
in their lives.
A lot of women never breastfeed.
Right.
Or do for like a
or
month
or
and
even
go right
have
back.
Kids.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
So you look, the oh, human yeah. body is... sort of designed or evolved to go through that hormonal cycle a few
for
dozen
antiquated
times.
System.
Right. Now we do it, women do it hundreds of times. Uh-huh. And the theory is that this is one of the major causes of ovarian and breast cancer.
Over menstruating.
Menstruating too many times, that it stresses uh-huh. the body, which gets back to what we were saying before. When we stray from the path that we evolved to tread,
yeah.
we suffer all sorts of consequences, some psychological, some physiological.
And no other species tries to hold back their development.
Right.
If they start to evolve, no species is having a meeting. It's like, guys, let's not do that. You know, let's not develop an opposable thumb. We always have this without it. That's, why do we need it? We didn't need it before. Yeah. It just happens. We're the only one, I'd assume, that we're like...
Yeah, we cultivate ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So why do you think people get... even if I'm with a woman who's not into monogamy, and she's like, yeah, I don't really want a boyfriend right now. I don't want to be tied down. It's fine. We'll hang out when we hang out. There's still this competitive feeling that comes up in you when you know your mate is with someone else.
Yeah. Well, we talk about jealousy in the book. and essentially what we say is that jealousy is, like most human behaviors, a combination of innate instinctive responses and, you know, shaped by culture. Okay. So we look in Sexodyne, we look at cultures all over the world, and we find that, yeah, there is some sort of insecurity in everyone, everywhere. And jealousy is certainly an expression of insecurity. But what we find is that some societies have rituals to minimize that.
The amount of jealousy.
Yeah, jealousy and possessiveness.
Uh-huh.
They're considered ridiculous and pathetic.
Yeah, it's possessiveness. That's what it's like. I don't own you and you don't own me. What are we talking about?
Right. But other societies like ours amplify it. Ramp it up.
How? What?
Well, think about love songs, okay?
Uh-huh.
One of the most popular love songs of all time is When a Man Loves a Woman, right? That whiny fucking classic. If you listen to the words to that, when a man loves a woman, he'll turn his back on his best friend if he puts her down. He'll spend his last dime to give her what she needs. And he'll sleep out in the fucking rain if she says that's the way it has to be. That's love?
Yeah.
That's fucking pathetic.
Yeah.
That's not love. That's a loser, right? So, you know, and pick a song, you know, Every Breath You Take, I'll Be Watching You. Sting wrote that because he was reading Orwell. That wasn't a love song. But, you know, and Sting himself said, like, why does everyone think that's a love song? It's a song about the security state, you know?
Every breath you take, I'll be watching you. Wow.
Oh, can't you see? You belong to me. You know, come on.
So the same 1984 version of Big Brother is the same way we feel about relationships.
Right. I own you. You belong to me.
Yeah, I'd rather be like, go fly. Do whatever.
What do we call each other? Baby.
Uh-huh.
What the fuck is up with baby? Who's fucking babies? You know?
Yeah.
Baby. Infantilizing. So anyway, the point is that our culture celebrates that sort of insecurity. You know, and I'm sure you've had this experience. You're with a woman. Or I've certainly had this experience with women who say, well, you're not jealous. You don't really love me.
Yeah, I have that, definitely.
You know, Latinas. I get that a lot from Latinas.
Latinos, yeah. Are you not monogamous in your marriage?
Well, we don't talk about the specifics of our marriage in public.
Somebody's been, okay.
Just because it comes up in every interview, and we don't want to get... You know, we don't want to be...
I also believe, like, what you decide to do has nothing to do with your research and what
is... Well, yeah, that's the thing. And if you start talking about your own personal relationship, then suddenly the science is, you know, gone.
Uh-huh.
And relationships change so much. So my stock answer to that is that our relationship is informed by our research.
Okay.
So when I said that to Dan Savage in an interview, he cracked up and said... That's going to be my answer from now on. My relationship is informed by Chris Ryan's research.
I like that.
But anyway, so, yeah, we live in a society that sees jealousy as a sign of love.
Right.
As an indication of love. Whereas other societies see it as a sign of immaturity and emotional
How
shallowness.
Do they combat that in other societies?
Well, various ways. There are societies like the Mosuo in southwestern China, very interesting people, who they say that love is like the seasons. It comes and goes and can't be controlled.
Mm-hmm.
And so every sexual interaction between a man and woman is seen, or I guess between men and women. I don't know much about same-sex interactions among the Mosuo, but the... Every man and woman is seen as completely sexually autonomous. And every interaction is seen as a one-time thing with no implied continuity. So if you and a woman hook up, that's great. Yeah. And tomorrow's a new day. We'll see what happens. And if anyone starts to express any sort of possessiveness over someone else, that's seen as pathetic and ridiculous, and it's shamed by the society.
Like a kid who says, that's my toy. And you have to say, it's not your toy. That's a kindergarten. Right. You were using it before. It's not yours now.
That toy is, So, that's one example. And that society's been around a long time. Marco Polo stayed with them, actually, on his travels and completely misunderstood what was going on. He thought he was, like, getting one over on the guys by sleeping with the women, not being able to comprehend that the women could do whatever they wanted.
They're like, yeah, man, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Italians. Other societies have very interesting rituals. Like, for example, we talk about, I think it's the Canela or maybe the Culina. I always get them mixed up in the Amazon, who have this ritual that they call, translates as the order to get meat.
The order to get meat, yeah.
Right. So what happens is the women will wake up in the morning in the village and they go around singing this song that translates to essentially like, you guys are lazy, we don't get enough meat, you know, get out of your damn hammocks and bring us some meat.
Yeah.
All right, now, I spoke to the anthropologist who lived with him, and he said that meat has a double meaning in their society. So they're saying, go hunting, but also fuck us, you lazy assholes. So while they're singing this song, the women will approach the men who are lying around in their hammocks, and a woman will beat a man's hammock post with a stick. That means if you, dude, in the hammock, come home tonight with some meat, I'll fuck you. And you can't do it with the guy you're normally fucking. So it has to be someone you don't normally fuck, right? So it's to motivate him to go hunting.
To get out of there. Maybe I can fuck this new chick.
Right. So he gets to fuck someone new, right?
Wow.
Or new. Like, well, it's different. A hunter-gatherer society, so it's not his normal partner. So the guys will get up and they'll all go leave the village to go hunting, right? But before they separate, because they hunt individually, before they separate, they agree to meet back at a certain point before they go back into the village. So they go out hunting. Some guys shoot a monkey. Some don't. But then when they meet before they go into the village, they'll cut up whatever they caught so every man walks in with a piece of meat. So everybody gets laid.
Wow.
Right. So there are rituals like that
that
assure that you can't get too possessive because your partner's going to be screwing somebody else anyway.
And you're trying to get them laid.
Yeah.
They're like, here, yeah, you might bone the girl I usually hook up with, but that's fine. Get some, I'm not with
her. Sure, yeah, I'm going to be with her, you know, so whatever. So it keeps, I mean, the point is, you know, people think this is all about getting laid, right?
Yeah.
It's not really about getting laid, it's about surviving. That's what's really interesting. These societies can't exist if people are fighting. And they share everything in hunter-gatherer societies. They breastfeed one another's kids. They share food. They share shelter. They have protection, the access to the spirit world. Everything is shared in hunter-gatherer societies, not because they're noble savages or some shit like that, just because that's the best way to mitigate risk in a hunter-gatherer ecology, right?
Okay.
So it doesn't, it would create social conflict you're mine. Well, what do you mean, I'm yours? You know, hunter-gatherer societies have extreme autonomy of individuals. So nobody's...
And there's no shame associated with it either.
No, no.
But in our society, women don't need to get supported by men, except Orange County, I guess. But like...
So women still make, you know, 20% less for doing the same work. Plus, you know, a woman gets pregnant, raising a kid alone is no easy job.
That takes you out of the workforce.
Takes you out of the workforce. You got to pay, or you got to pay, you know, a babysitter to raise your kid. I mean, it's not easy. So women do need to get support from men. And that's why you get, you know, marriage is the father passing possession of the woman to the husband.
So you take care of her now.
Right, because women in post-agricultural society have traditionally only been able to get what they need to survive through a man.
But now they really can, though, get by. You can make a living for yourself. As well, if you go to college, you come out looking for a job to support yourself.
Right. But you're still facing a real tough road if you want to have kids. But anyway, your point is valid, because if you look at societies like Northern European societies, where women have much greater social support from the government. So if a woman gets pregnant, she gets, you know, paid leave. She gets free medical care. Her kids get free education.
Yeah, Switzerland's amazing.
Right. So what do you find in those societies? Generally, unless there's a strong religious overlay, but societies like Sweden or Holland or Denmark, women are much freer sexually because they don't need to barter their sexuality to a man for material.
Yeah, I'm so amazed sometimes when I meet a woman who says, like, who, you know, we have this chemical connection. So that happens sometimes, and you both see, like, we're attracted to each other, and we're laughing at each other's jokes, and we want to, like, you know, take it to a sexual level. There still comes some, a time like, well, you got to buy me dinner. You have to do this. You have to do something nice for me. Take me to a movie. I'm like, what? Like, what, you're not getting anything out of this?
Right.
Like, you're not going to enjoy it? Like, what do you mean? I have to buy you?
Right.
You're not losing anything.
Right.
It just seems so antiquated.
Yeah, yeah. Could I just write you a check?
Yeah, is that what you want? I don't have time for dinner. Do you mind if I just cut you a check? Yeah. Is that what we're talking about here?
Or hold my hand over a candle for 5 minutes
to
or
prove
something.
To you.
Yeah, prove my love. Yeah. You know, talking about the whole survival thing, I was looking, when I was researching the book, I went looking for an example of the first 20th century case of sort of open marriages or partner swapping, that kind of thing. And I thought it would be some commune, you know, in Topanga Canyon
place,
or something, right? Turned out really interesting. It was on military bases in World War II.
Really?
In the Pacific. Air Force and Navy pilots who had the highest fatality rate of any branch of the military started the key party tradition.
Started the what?
Key parties.
What is key party?
Key party, where they throw your keys in a hat and then you just take the keys and randomly have sex with whoever's keys you grab.
Yeah.
And in the interviews with the survivors, they said that, you know, partly it was that, you know, they're all like, all these pilots are like super good looking, you know, genetically superior Ubermen. And of course, their wives were hot too. So you had you weren't going to end up with, you know, someone you didn't want to be with, probably.
Right. Oh, I got the pig. Damn it.
Exactly.
I don't always pick Marcy's key. She's so gross. Marcy, quit switching keys.
Really? Stick with one keychain,
like,
will you?
10 different keys to fool people.
But, you know, interviews with the survivors, they said 25% of the pilots died during the war.
Yeah.
Incredible, right? And so what they said was, like, yeah, okay, it was, you know, carpe diem, we were living for the moment and all that. But also, I knew that if I died, those other guys were going to take care of my wife and kids because they had a connection to her. They loved her. And she loved them. So the fact that she had these relationships with them actually made me feel better.
Huh.
When I, you know, flew off into Japanese anti-aircraft fire.
Wow, that makes sense. Did you do you think there's a connection made with sex, like the, an emotional connection every time you do that? Like you become like so, like you said, like these guys ended up wanting to like support her or help her because they loved her.
Well, I think sex certainly can have that effect, and often does, and people misunderstand sometimes when we argue that our ancestors were promiscuous. They think we're talking about screwing strangers with no feeling.
Yeah.
But that wasn't possible in a hunter-gatherer society. There were no strangers.
Oh.
Right? And these are people you live with your whole life. So there's no chance that you're having random sex the way we would in the modern world.
You just know them really well. And it's
know them very well. So, yeah, there's all sorts of connection and depth and complexity in the relationship, right?
Yeah.
But as far as, you know, whether sex is always emotional or not, I think it's like, I often think of sex like music. You know, it can be a Bach toccata in a cathedral that makes you feel the presence of God, or it can be the Rolling Stones, you know, in a drunken party.
Yeah.
It can be everything in between. So I think, you know, people are wrong to think that sex is always sacred.
Or that
it can never be.
Or that, yeah.
That it has to be just an act of right. getting rid of your sperm.
Yeah, and you know, you go to a Rolling Stones concert, that doesn't make you less appreciative of, you know, your choir in the cathedral right. if you're into that. You know, it's possible to have different feelings for different things.
How many different places did you research for this book? How long did it take you to write?
No.
I mean,
over 10 years.
Really?
Yeah.
And you went to key parties and different societies like that? Not to participate, but just to see what they're all about?
We went over to lots of places, years. Man.
Jesus.
I mean, the research was primarily theoretical, you know, books and articles and stuff.
Okay.
Archival. My PhD is on human sexual behavior and prehistory. So a lot of the research I did for my PhD dissertation is in the book. And but yeah, like some interesting stuff. Like I finished my dissertation. And
where were you?
In San Francisco. It's called Saybrook Graduate School. It's okay. a humanistic graduate school that only does psychology advanced degrees. But anyway, you write your dissertation, and like everybody else, you're painfully aware of the fact that, you know, four or five people are ever going to read this thing, you know?
That you work on for, like, so long.
It's a huge amount of work. But, I like everybody else, I had fantasies that somebody would invite me to some conference somewhere or whatever. And sure enough, 2 months after I finished the dissertation, I get an email from some professor somewhere saying, you know, so-and-so passed your dissertation along to me. Very interesting. We'd like to invite you to a conference in Las Vegas in August to present your research.
Wow.
And I was like, fuck yeah, man. All expenses.
That's all
came.
Bonus.
Vegas. Yeah. In August. I don't know if you've been in Vegas in August.
I have. My shoes melted once. I was walking along the sidewalk and my shoes started like,
that's what happened.
Like
you
gum.
Stick to the floor. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, it was the biggest swingers convention in the world. 3,000 couples in one hotel, plus walk-ins.
Wow.
Yeah, the lifestyles.
Not to mention normal Vegas.
Yeah.
They're already
so-called
the depravity that
Vegas.
Goes on there on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that was my first PowerPoint presentation.
Were they receptive to your...
It was unbelievable, man. It was... Oh, my God. I was nervous.
You must have been a superstar after you finished that talk. They must have all been like, dude.
Yeah.
That's the dude. You're talking to me.
Yeah. So I'm doing, but I mean, my presentation at that point was very academic.
Uh-huh.
You know, it was very like charts and graphs and shit. And I remember like there were maybe 50 people in the room. Half of them were in bikinis and, you know, whatever form of state of undress. And in the room next door, there was a presentation about fisting, you know, safe fisting. Yeah. And then the other room was like how to manage your three-way relationship or whatever.
Wow, really?
So I got the more, you know, sort of academically inclined swingers. Yeah.
How to manage your three-way relationship. I could see that being an issue. It's
yeah.
Like you got to figure out who. Everyone I know who's done that has always invited a third, you know, a second woman in. It always becomes like just driving a wedge and then they end up going for that other woman.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Or they, yeah. or the first woman says, "Okay, we can do that, but never be with her when I'm not there."
Right.
And as soon as they go to the bathroom, then it's like, "Hey, she's not here.
Yeah.
Let's do something."
Yeah. Well, you know, that's the problem. You gotta
have rules you can live with, I guess.
Was it Dylan, Bob Dylan, who said, "If you're gonna be an outlaw, you have to be honest."
Huh.
You know, and I think that applies to sexuality as well. Like if. Because society tells you the rules. Society tells you these are the rules. This is how you do it. So everybody knows. Now, if you're going to go off that path, you're going to go bushwhacking. You got to watch where you step, right? Because you're not on the same road with everyone else.
Yeah.
So you got to be really careful, and because you're not getting guidance. You're not following the crowd.
Yeah. So you can't go with like these people have paved the way for me. So I know.
Right.
That's how it's, right. So
you got to be really honest. So
why would honesty help that?
Well, because if the rule, if what you agree with your partner is you're not with her when I'm not around,
yeah,
and then your partner leaves and you do it anyway, well, you're
living this false thing that you're not, that you didn't
you're
set
not
up.
Being honest,
yeah,
you know. So, and that's what people don't understand. They, you know, people say like, oh, you know, we talk about polyamory or something, and people say, well, life's not that easy. Easy.
Have you ever fucking talked to a polyamorous relationship? There's nothing easy about it. It's all, you know, negotiation and conversations and, you know, who's, you know, the Google calendar, figuring out who's with whom and what night and what bed are you.
So it's people, it's like three or four people in one relationship?
Yeah, that's polyamory is committed multiple relationships.
Okay.
So, it, you know, like you might have a woman that's your primary relationship, but you're seeing two other women and she's seeing a few other guys and everything's on the table and everyone knows what's happening.
I used to date this girl in Austin and when I was married, I'd see her once or twice a year and she would get mad at me, this girl in Austin. She knew about the wife, but she would get mad at me if I hooked up with someone else on the road somewhere. She would get kind of possessive about it, and I was like, do you want me to be biogamous? Is that what you're looking for? Like only you and the wife?
Yeah,
it's weird how people set their lines and then say, okay, nothing else above that.
Right. Well, people want to feel special. You know, and that's fair enough.
I feel like that's where a lot of it comes, where it's like, if you go and have sex with someone else, you will leave me.
Right.
And I won't be able to own you anymore. You won't be around anymore.
Right.
And that's what it all comes down to.
Although ironically, that demand is what causes a lot of people to leave.
Yeah, because I'm like, I'm bored with someone else showing me interest. Now I have to, instead of like, well, just explore that for a month.
Right.
Most relationships, most times you go out with a girl or a girl goes with a guy, 3 dates and it's like, it wasn't working out. Yeah. So just let that go.
Right.
And then stay with this guy that you built up this awesome life with.
Right.
Don't ruin it all.
Exactly. And also, if that's your nature,
yeah,
and you find someone who understands that and accepts that and honors that part of you, you're not going to walk away from that. You know, let's say you're with somebody who's like, yeah, I get it. I see you. I get what you need. Fine. You're not going to walk away from that.
No.
You're going to walk away from the person who says, I don't give a shit who you are. I need this.
Well,
okay, fine. If I find someone who knows me better, then I'm leaving.
And it's not about better or worse. Show me about better or worse.
No, it's about a better fit.
Yeah.
A better, more congruent relationship. Yeah.
If it has to be one or the other.
Right.
But I find the, got it to where I was talking to a girl, and she was like, I don't want a boyfriend, so this is fine. But also, like, she still felt like a little bit of like, you know, that inside you, like, I can't allow you to sleep with someone else. I know I don't care, but I also, there's something in there that bothers me.
Yeah.
But she was like, I was able to explain it once. I was like, I like, something I'm attracted to is like a nice big set of boobs. But then sometimes I'm also attracted to like a nice perky A cup.
Right.
You cannot have both of those.
Right.
That's not something you're going to be able to have unless you're a freak.
Yeah.
So like, what are my options?
Yeah.
It's not
porn.
Yeah. It's like, you can get both from different.
Yeah.
You don't have to turn down one completely.
Yeah. Well, it's like we're saying with food or music or whatever. Like if, you know, what, I have to choose the Rolling Stones or Bach? Really? For the rest of my life? Yeah. I have to? Come on.
I also compare like relationships to friendships.
Yeah.
And if I don't want to hang out with my friend Steve Simone, I just don't call him.
Right.
And there's no like, who are you with?
It's
other than Mike Black.
Right.
He's not going to get jealous of that unless it's too much.
Because he's got other friends,
too. Yeah, he's got other friends. It's like, I'll see you when I'd love to see you.
Right.
You know, or we'll all hang out together, or it's I don't lose you, but... Yeah.
You know the concept of zero-sum thinking?
Uh-uh.
It's zero-sum just means like, you know, like there's this bottle of water here. So the more I drink, the less there is for you.
Yeah.
So it ends up to zero, right? Because... So that's the world we live in now. We live in an economical situation where... You know, the more you have, the less I have, right? But that's not the world our ancestors lived in. That's not the world our species evolved in. Our species evolved in a world where there was an endless supply of food, an endless supply.
We could never run out. There's buffalo everywhere. We could just kill one when we need
just
to.
How much time do you want to take to really, you know, go shoot buffalo? You know, you shoot, you eat, and then you forget about it for a while. So it's interesting that we think of our affection in terms of our sexual affection in zero-sum terms, right? If she loves him, then she loves me less or not at all. But we don't think that way about our friendships, as you just said.
Right.
Right? The fact that your friend has other friends doesn't mean he's less friends with you somehow, right? And we don't even think that way in terms of our kids, right? Like, you have a kid. You love your kid. Now you have another kid. You love it half as much?
You don't, right?
Of course. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't have
more love.
A zero sum.
It's more like passing a flame. where like you can keep using a candle to light other candles, and the first candle stays the exact same
very
level.
Very poetic, yeah.
That's
exactly.
Judaism stuff. That's what they taught me about knowledge. Yeah. You don't lose your knowledge.
Right. Knowledge is a flame to be kindled.
Yeah.
Yeah, to be fed. And I think love is the same, and sexual attraction is the same. I feel like I live in Spain, right, most of the time.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons I live in Spain is the first time I remember...
That's pretty cool.
In Barcelona, I remember like
Barcelona,
the first spring day, walking down the street, and like a lot of these women are flirting with me.
Yeah,
and it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anybody wants to fuck me. It doesn't mean I'm going to get anybody's phone number. It just means that they aren't ashamed of their sexuality. And you look at a woman and she feels you looking at her, and she smiles because
she likes the look.
She likes it.
Yeah.
You come to the States, you look at a woman, and they're like calling the cops because you're a rapist. It's a completely different vibe.
Wow.
Here. There's all this fear associated, and I'm not blaming women at all. Nobody take me that way, because I understand.
My
why
feeling is, if a girl wears a hot skirt, like she's dressed like Kelly Bundy, then like she wants me to look as we pass.
Right. Respectfully.
Right. Yeah. You don't grab her boob.
Right.
But like, yeah, right. Just glance.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. And so they're not, they don't have shame for it. So they're just like, yeah.
Like, hey, yeah, I'm like hot. This. And you notice. Great. We're both happy.
Thanks.
I mean, I moved here to San Francisco with a Spanish woman I was living with. And one day I came home and she was really upset. We were living in San Francisco. And she was really upset. And she's like super hot woman, beautiful woman. And I finally got her to explain why she was upset. She was upset because nobody was looking at her.
Oh, and she was used to that.
And she's like, what happened? Am I fat? Am I ugly? What happened? Nobody's looking at me. I mean, part of it, we were living in the Castro.
Yeah, the so super PC-est place in the world. Oh, right. All the gays. Like, well, they're not as interested in you as some
exactly.
other.
They're looking at me, baby. But it's America, too. It's just America. We're so sex negative here.
Do they have gay parts of town in Barcelona?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Is that everywhere in the world? There's like a gay part of town?
Gay Xempla, it's called in Barcelona.
What is it called?
Gay Xempla.
Gay Xempla?
Yeah. And then there's Sitges, a beach town just a little bit south. It's like one of the gay capitals of Europe.
They have that in Brazil. They have the gay beaches. It's all one long beach, but they have different, like where the young kids hang out, the gays, and
same
it's all just
Spain.
Like.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's all topless. You know, it's another thing. Like, even, like, mannequins in Spain have nipples.
Really?
Yeah. So you see a mannequin in a store window, and she's got erect nipples.
They just it's celebrate like, their sexuality more.
Yeah. And there, you know, ads will be, like, a woman breastfeeding a baby, and it'll be, you know, advertising something.
We're so ashamed. What is that? Is that just Jesus? Is that why we live that way?
Well, no, because they've got Jesus, too, you know? I mean, Spain is super Catholic.
Yeah, good point.
No, I think it's more the Protestant British thing. You know, it's the English antibody
that effect.
Yeah, yeah. It's a real shame too.
It really is,
because it's like what I was saying about Spain is, you know, you walk down the street in Barcelona and you're absorbing energy as you go down the street. Everybody's getting energized by the erotic energy that's just like static on the street. It's fantastic. It's like it's clean energy. It's like the solar power of the soul or something.
Yeah.
You know, because there's nobody gets hurt. There's no waste. There's no pollution. There's no dirtiness. It's just everybody feels better.
Wow.
You know, and
nobody says, "Hey, don't look at my girl."
Well, yeah, you might get some depending how you look or how uptight the dude is, you know, but generally in Spain there's just a much more relaxed attitude. Women love to be looked at, you know, respectfully, of course. But
is cheating there looked upon like less badly? I was somewhere. I remember this where it's just like, but there'll be a fight about it, but it won't be like we're done.
You're just within the relationship. Yeah,
yeah,
I think there's probably a pretty big difference between urban Spain and rural Spain.
Okay,
and I really only know urban Spain, but my sense of it is that people see marriage as being more about family.
Okay.
And there's an expectation that things are going to happen outside of the marriage, and that as long as it's discreet, it's not a big problem.
Yeah. That's what a lot of athletes are.
Yeah.
Just to keep it out of the press.
Right.
And don't, and I, fine. Right. You gave me a mansion.
Because it's okay. Like part of the deal. Yeah. You sort of, and in Spain, like families get married, you know, especially families with some money. It's about, the family connection. So, you know, just because you slept with somebody, we're not going to sell the house and get divorced and the kids and all that. You know, just be quiet about it. Be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, rural is completely different than urban.
And, you know, that extends to the legal system as well. It's very interesting. Mm-hmm. And you know, there are two very different legal traditions. In the U.S., we have a law-based legal tradition where if you break the law, you can get busted, even if you don't bother anybody. Whereas in Spain, if you don't bother anybody, the cops aren't interested.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So
it's only victim crimes.
Yeah. Yeah. Essentially, generally, the cops are interested if somebody's complaining.
Okay.
So let's say you're having a party and you're playing the music loud, but your neighbors are all at the party.
Then
so nobody
no crime.
Calls the cops. Yeah. Nobody cares. Cops drive by. They hear the loud music. They're not going to stop.
Right.
Right? You're smoking a joint on the street. Cops walk by. They're not going to say anything. Unless somebody says, hey, that guy over there is smoking a joint and there's a school and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Then the cop will come over and
this
say,
hey,
dude.
This is creating unrest. I have to put an end to this unrest.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he won't even arrest you. He'll just say, come on, you're in front of a school.
That's what they're doing in Spain?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Canada's like that too. Like, do you mind getting off the hotel property?
Yeah, exactly. You're bothering that guy over there. That's the problem. Not that you're smoking a joint or you're having a party.
It's not the act itself. It's the result.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's the way they look at sexual crime as well. It's like, hey, yeah, I'm pissed off because you fucked my sister, you know, or I'm pissed off because somebody told me they saw you in a public place with so-and-so.
Right.
That's the problem, that you're embarrassing me, that you're you know, making this a public event, not that you're having this relationship. I think that, you know, I can't speak for everybody, but
yeah,
that's
it seems
the
like
general approach.
A lot of that would be pushed away if it's just a question of coming home and saying, hey, you're my baby. You know, I love you.
Right.
You're the, you know.
Yeah.
Just stuff, just make people feel appreciated.
Right.
So they don't feel like, oh, you only show appreciation to her. That's when you start chasing after you with a rolling pan.
Right.
A rolling pin, whatever.
Exactly.
Jesus. Sunset Boulevard.
It's funny. It's funny to be on Sunset Boulevard talking into a microphone. I gotta say it.
There's so many distractions here. I love it. I love it. Usually not. I didn't think like deep conversations like this, but usually it's just fun, like fuck around conversations. It's great.
Watch the tour buses go
by.
Yeah,
people come up. Doug Benson was here with me. We were right there, and then
who?
Doug Benson, comedian, and we started smoking pot there. And then this bike tour group came up, and Doug was like, "You want to smoke pot with us?" And they're like, "Yeah." It was like amazing, and he's like a known pothead, so they were excited to smoke pot with Doug Benson and this other tour group. In a bus went by, and he was like, "You're in the wrong group." That's kind of like passing this joint around.
Yeah, get a regular stop.
You know what they said actually, in terms of like not expressing your sexuality when you're in a small town and stuff. I did this class in college, and it was that a lot of gays in World War II didn't know that gay was an allowable thing,
right?
Until they got to the military.
Right.
And then they've met other gay people, and they were like, "Hey, we got a whole group here."
Right.
And they're like, "I'm not different and a bad person." Like, oh,
you know, gay is something. I'm pitching a TV show right now. Right?
Yeah,
yeah.
Where you turn a straight person completely gay against their will.
What's exactly.
That would be a really interesting show. He's like, "I don't want to." You're like, "Fuck you, hold him down."
That's right. Yeah, we could do it both ways. See which works better. One of the things we're looking at in the show is like things that we think we understand, but when you start digging a little bit, it's actually a lot more complicated. And homosexuality is one of those things. We think we know what it is,
yeah,
but it's actually really complicated. For example, there's a society in Papua New Guinea that believes that semen contains the essence of masculinity, right?
Okay.
So the teenage boys who want to grow up to be the most macho warriors, you know, like the captain of the football team kind of guys,
yeah,
suck as much dick as possible.
Oh, to get more semen.
To become more masculine. Now, think about that. So are they gay?
They,
you know?
Yeah.
And there are societies like that all
our
over the world.
Like, yes, no, no question about it. There's like, no, they're getting more masculine.
They're the most masculine.
That's how the Speedos were in Brazil. But I remember my mom got me a Speedo when I was in fourth grade. And everyone's like, you're gay, you gay one. And then I went to Brazil. I'm like, these guys are so much more macho than I am. And they're wearing a piece of loincloth on the beach.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot of this stuff is very culturally determined.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we think we know what it is.
Do those people in Papua New Guinea not jerk off? Do they try to hold their semen in?
I don't know. Good question. Good question. I told Dan Savage about that. He said, what exact part of Papua New Guinea is that? And do they have an airport?
Is that guy a cool guy, Dan Savage?
He's great. He's cool. He's wonderful, yeah. I like him a lot.
Do you think there's something to not to holding in your seed? I was talking about this with my friend, where it's like you get more sexual if you just go 2 days without jerking off, or you like try to find a mate more, you push more.
Yeah, I don't think there's the Taoist tradition is very adamant about not ejaculating, that after the age of like 40 or something, you lose a year of life every time you ejaculate, some shit.
Seems
like that.
A lot.
Yeah. I would have been.
How long are we gonna
20
live?
Years ago. Yeah. No, I don't buy that. In fact, I see it more as like a muscular thing. You know, use it or lose it.
Oh.
And there is research that seems to show that the more frequently a man ejaculates in his 20s, the less likely he is to have prostate cancer in his 50s and 60s.
Oh, you're supposed to do it every day clear. I've heard that.
Right, because toxins accumulate in semen, and you know, if you just leave it sitting in your prostate, that can, you know, leak into the walls and the tissue around.
Yeah, I just mean on a like a 2 day level, where it's like if I got a date on Friday, Wednesday night will be the last day I jerk off.
Oh, I see
so
what
that
you're
I
saying.
Get, like, I'm antsy and I try to work
so that,
harder.
So then that's your gunning for those compliments from the women. Like, ooh, what a load.
That, oh, maybe.
Yeah.
maybe. Yeah. I didn't think of it like, yeah, maybe. And they look so sad, too, in a condom. Have you ever seen it? It just looks like a drop.
In the reservoir.
Like,
tip.
Oh, that's it. You're like, it's more if you spread it out.
Yeah. It's good for your skin, baby. Yeah. Yeah.
yeah, that's cool, man. How was your TED Talk? How fun was that?
It wasn't that much fun.
Really?
I was nervous, man.
Yeah.
I was really nervous. The week was fun. The week was great.
What goes on for those?
Well,
they do a lot.
It's a strange thing, man. It's like most of the people there are really rich.
Okay.
You know,
are tickets. They have to pay for tickets and stuff.
$7,500 each.
Just go sit there. Wow. That's why Jim Carrey is always...
Yeah, Jim Carrey was there.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
$7,500 each. Okay.
I didn't meet Jim Carrey, but I met Peter Gabriel and...
Wow, really?
Peter Singer, who's a very famous philosopher, and Amanda Palmer. I don't know if you know her. She's a musician.
Okay.
Amazing. Very, very interesting people. But it's
a
funny thing.
You guys are all there together.
Yeah, especially the speakers, you know, because you have these special speaker events, you know, and so we...
Do they have a lot of, like, talks throughout the day?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, every day so you've got a bunch of talks.
Experts around.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and then, like, Elon Musk, you know, the guy who invented PayPal and Tesla Motors, and now he owns this space company that's supplying the space shuttle.
Yeah,
you know, he's like rockets and shit, you know, and he was there, and you know, these 15-year-old kids who invent, you know, diagnostic tests for pancreatic cancer, and I mean, it's just amazing, the people there. But anyway, it's just a very interesting scene, because it's all, you know, like all this networking going on, all these like venture capitalists there, and CEOs of Silicon Valley companies, and the chief CEO of Google, and, you know, all these like super important people. And then you've got the stars, you know, Goldie Hawn and Meg Ryan and, you know, whatever. Well, for me, the big thrill was Peter Gabriel. Like, chatting with Peter Gabriel.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Fucking awesome, you know. I didn't even say anything interesting. I think I sort of fucked up, because at one point I said to him, I said, wow, you seem so normal. I'm amazed at how normal you seem. And
I meant it as a compliment, but I think I saw in his eyes that he was like normal.
What do you mean?
We're here at this
exceptional place.
Why are you calling me normal?
Full of exceptional people. And you're exactly. Just like, I'm nobody.
Yeah, he felt. And he said, yeah. And I said, like, wow, you know, for someone who's been in the public eye for so long, you seem really down to earth and normal. And he said, well, for me, there was really no choice.
What does that mean?
I don't really know. I don't know. I mean,
he was one of the cool, like, there's not many people who go solo and get, like, more interesting as musicians. But he did. Yeah. When he left Genesis, it was like, I mean, this stuff with Genesis was great, but then, like, the Peter Gabriel stuff was like, whoa.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think what he might have been referring to the fact that he's bipolar.
Oh, really?
And he's had some psychological issues over the years, and so maybe he was saying, like, I had to keep my shit straight or I would have gone off. Yeah, like Salisbury Hill, you know that song?
Yeah, what's that about?
That's about a psychotic break.
Oh, really?
Yeah, listen to the song again. You'll hear it's all an eagle comes out of the night and talks to him. Son, it's time to pack your bags. I'm here to take you home. I think it's about leaving
about
a mental hospital.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he had some really cool songs. Biko was really cool.
Oh, Biko's great. Yeah.
In Your Eyes.
Red Rain.
Oh, yeah.
Holy shit. Red Rain with Yosundur.
Who was that?
Yosundur is, I think he's from Senegal.
Was he singing in that?
Yeah, he sings.
I forgot how it goes.
Well, Red Rain is a song about a dream.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, you'll hear Yosundur singing in the background. And then years later, Yosundur wrote a song called This Dream. And in the back, Peter Gabriel sings in the background. Yeah, he does a lot of that kind of stuff.
I love when top level, any kind of artist that says, hey, you want to work on something together?
Oh,
like, what's going to happen
the best.
Here?
I mean, I read an interview with him years ago where someone asked him what was his favorite music that he'd ever made.
Uh-huh.
And he said it was the soundtrack to the movie The Last Temptation of Christ.
Wow.
And the record's called The Passion. So I went out and bought it, and it's fucking amazing. Holy shit. There are some women walking by
sunset,
here.
Man.
This should be a video podcast.
Jesus.
Because that was
the no bra
stellar
back exposed look is
the no bra afro
yeah
backless dress
that is mocha skin perfect
yeah beautiful
Jesus
and then you got the Mexican dudes across the street all going whoa mamacita
yeah. Those are all Armenians actually those are the cab drivers
But anyway, so I went out and bought this thing. It's called The Passion. Beautiful North African drumming and chanting and all this beautiful music. And then it turns out that he did that record with a bunch of North African musicians. And then, as is his habit, he made another record called Passion Sources,
yeah.
Which is all those guys, all those different groups that he worked with doing their own music.
Oh.
So he just used his fame to help
to get them going.
Get going. Yosundur is one of the best known singers in Europe. Peter Gabriel brought him up. He started Real World Records, which is all about promoting world music and getting, you know, people recognized from different parts of the world.
Wow.
These just are all
like
things
should
I should have talked and spoken to him about the other day instead of telling me his fucking
How long
normal.
Were you there for at this tech conference?
5 days.
Wow. And they put you up in the same hotels?
Yeah.
So you're around these people.
Yeah.
That's an
yeah.
amazing idea, just to get these people together. So that things like that can happen. That's where he could meet a guy like that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's probably the reason people pay $7,500 is it gives you a chance to have dinner with the CEO of Google, you know?
Yeah.
Or so a lot of these people are there for the networking, you know? And, you know, the presentations are interesting, but what they're really there for is the lunch, the dinner, the hangout.
Is it $7,500 for the 5 days or per talk?
No, it's for the 5 days, but I think that doesn't include hotel and all that.
Yeah.
It's
I wouldn't think so.
The entrance, yeah.
When does yours come out?
I don't know. It's up to them. They, you know, they told us at the time, like, we dribble them out over the course of a few months. So I have no idea. But when
really
it
cool.
happens, shit goes nuts.
Yeah,
so,
everyone gets into it.
Yeah, it's
when you see a good one of those. I saw Susan Cain talk about introversion.
Oh yeah,
and it just like opened up a light in my head.
Yeah, yeah. There's some amazing ones. The one. There's one about a woman who had a stroke. She's a neurologist and had a stroke, and so she, like, experienced having a stroke as a neurologist, so she knew what was happening as her brain was shutting down, and, like, very, very interesting.
Wow. Yeah. There was a doctor at the Warsaw Ghetto who got some incurable disease, and he knew he was going to die in 5 months. Like, that's all he had, because he got gout, something horrible, and with no medicine then. So he intentionally starved himself so he could document the effects of starvation on the human body.
Wow.
He said, I'm dying soon anyway. I'm not going to survive this.
Right.
Even if they come and, like, liberate us right now. So it's like, let's do some research for science and you guys can have food because there's so little to go around.
Wow.
Yeah, that's cool. Dedication. If she was a neuroscientist who knew what was happening. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, very, very interesting.
They're How did yours go? What do you think?
It went well, but I mean, the thing is, mine was pushing the limits. I was actually kind of surprised they invited me. Yeah. I mean, the whole thing was very weird. What happened was I was in Vancouver last summer.
Yeah.
And this friend of mine up there saw something in the newspaper that TED was having. They did this thing last year called the TED Talent Search, where they... I guess they were in 20 cities around the world, and they had people from, you know, that Africa and Asia and all over would come in. You know, they had already selected all these people based on videos they'd sent and stuff. So then they would have these little sort of affiliate TED things, not TEDx, which is a different thing, but it was official TED, but it was not the main show, right, which they do in what they've done in Long Beach for the last few years.
But, like traveling shows, like
versions. Sort of like a satellite thing. Uh-huh. So, anyway, so this friend called me and he said, "Hey, man, they're doing this TED thing in Vancouver Wednesday night. And this was Sunday. You should do it." And I was like, "You don't just do it. You don't just like show up and like, hey, you know."
People say that about comedy shows.
Yeah, like, hey, just go down to the comedy store, you know, and you're funny, you'll get in. Yeah, yeah. And people have always been saying to me since the book came out, people have been saying, oh, you should do a TED Talk. Like, yeah, but they have to ask you to do a TED Talk. You don't just do it. So anyway, so he was like, oh, no, dude, send him an email or something. I said, you send him a fucking email. I'm not sending him an email. It's crazy. So he did. He sent them an email.
Saying, I have this friend.
Saying, hey, Chris Ryan's in town. He wrote this book, whatever. And apparently someone had read the book.
Yeah.
So then they wrote back
and
said,
already.
Yeah, oh, we'd love to have Chris come down. We'll make a space for him. So then I get this thing Monday saying, can you come in tomorrow for rehearsal and do it on Wednesday? You have 6 minutes. And I was like, really? Holy shit. All right, great. But
how
I have no idea.
How do you simmer down the entire Sex at Dawn into 6 minutes?
Exactly. Yeah. I don't know how I did it. But
you just chose one thing to go for? And
I just went for it. So I did. Cool. I did my 6 minutes.
Yeah.
And then that's online. If you Google, you know, TED, Christopher Ryan, whatever, it'll come up. And then I guess that, so they, you know, they looked at that and then they see how many hits it gets and how many comments and all that. And from that, they decided who to invite to the big show.
Okay.
And so I got invited, but.
So they see an interest and they're like, oh.
Yeah. Well, they see an interest and, you know, I think they're probably trying to be a little less white bread because they're very, it's, you know, there's a certain vibe with TED, which is very much like, here's the problem. And here's how technology can save it, you know, and save us, and solve the problem. But I think in my case, they might have got a little more than they bargained for.
They didn't know, like, quite what you were going to...
They did. Well, I did a rehearsal online and a Skype with the main guy, and he was like, yeah, I don't know about this, you know. And some of my slides, they didn't want me to use the slides.
Why it showed, like...
Well, like the one slide, I mean, like I've been giving presentations about this book for 2.5 years now, right? Like universities and all sorts of situations. So like I've sort of developed
routine.
It's almost a comedy routine.
Yeah. My friend speaks to little girls on girls leadership and she's like, yeah, I have a routine now. I know where I get laughs.
Exactly. You got to have laugh points, especially if you're talking about something that makes people uncomfortable. So you're talking about sex. If they're not laughing, you're in trouble, you know, because then they're laughing at you or laughing because they're nervous, you know. So, you know, I've got these things. So when I talk about testicles, for example, and the way we were talking earlier about gorillas and bonobos and chimps and all that. So I've got a slide that's got, on the left, it's got a gorilla lying on his back and you can see like no balls at all, you know. And then on the right, there's a bonobo who's got balls the size of chicken eggs. And then in the middle is a friend of mine wearing a Speedo sitting in a hammock who's funny. Got pretty big balls. And they're labeled. It says Gorilla Bonobo Italian, right? And that always gets a huge laugh.
Yeah.
Ted, they were like, no, I think that would offend the Italians.
Oh,
I
was wow.
Like, you're... The one way to not offend an Italian is to tell him he's got big balls. Believe me, no Italian will ever be offended by
that. That's the worst when people get offended on someone else's behalf.
Right.
Jesus. That probably won't show up.
Yeah.
That probably will show up.
Yeah. So they didn't want me to use that. But, you know, the advice at the time, I felt like, oh, come on, you guys are uptight, you know,
yeah.
relax a little bit. But then when I was on stage, I was very appreciative because I think they were right. They know their audience.
They want everything serious.
And their audience is, you know, like I said, they're CEOs. They're, you know, seven-figure net worth people. They're probably not going to laugh at the Italian big ball joke as much as you know,
where you normally speak.
University crowd, yeah.
Yeah, it's when you do TV shows, when you do stand-up on TV or for some specific thing, and they tell you, like, oh, don't do this joke. Half of the time, it's like, shut the fuck up. You have no idea. I know how
right.
to get laughs.
Right.
And the other times, you're like, oh, I didn't know what that audience would be like. Thank you for letting me know
right.
that this lady hates jokes about, you know, whatever. Her
yeah.
son is autistic, so don't do an autism joke.
Right. As a performer, it's tough to know which way to go with that, mm-hmm. right? Because sometimes you go out and you like, water it down, and you're like, what the fuck,
it's
man?
It's too watered down.
That could have been really... That could have been much better, you know?
Yeah.
If I'd just done my thing.
We had this guy here, Ahmed Ahmed. He's an Arab, and after 9/11, his act took off because he was just talking about what he's like.
Right.
How he can't fly and stuff. He did these 9/11 jokes, and somebody, maybe a year later, they got really mad. And they're like, my brother died in 9/11. And it was like, oh, well, yeah, you're not going to enjoy this joke then. As much as everyone else will,
right.
who did not have a brother who died in 9/11.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, so what do I have to do now?
Yeah, like, if it was an audience full of you, then
yeah.
I wouldn't do any of this.
Right.
Man, that's really cool. TED Talk. Do you ever see the one about crows?
Huh.
It's just this guy who studied crows for 25 years and
yeah.
how shockingly intelligent
yeah,
they are.
Super smart.
And how they can build tools in order to get
right, yeah.
food.
Oh, maybe I have seen that. Yeah.
You hear it when, I'm pretty sure it was a TED Talk, but you hear it when he reveals something the crows did, this murmur go off in the audience of like all these really smart people going, wait, whoa, what are they doing?
Yeah.
They would see, the one I remember was they had these researchers who in college who grabbed a couple crows and did studies on them and then released them after 6 months. Crows, the whole group of crows attacked those researchers. They would fly, swoop down and like they'd have to like duck for the entire time they were in college, years later.
Really?
They left. They graduated college, went to grad school, coming out, came back 5 years later to give
reunion.
A speech. They got attacked again.
No shit.
Yeah. No other instances of crows attacking students.
Wow.
They just remember.
Yeah. Yeah. Birds are interesting. The parrots are really smart, too.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. There was a woman who had a gray parrot who'd like... The parrot recognized like 100 words or something. And like
can recognize
the
words.
She built a grid and it would like... communicate by pecking on different symbols
so it could express itself.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. 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 I think if we really understood animal consciousness, life would be impossible. We wouldn't be able to eat anything
because
it'd be like, you know, this fiction that animals don't feel affection and love and loss and mourning and all that is just...
Well, cows make noise when they're separated from their calves. They make this
yeah.
moaning noise
yeah.
that is really similar to that scene in Amistad where they drag this, you know, the baby away from the mom. I mean, it looks exactly like that. They're moaning their loss
moan
of their
is
child.
A moan, yeah. Yeah, I hear you, so to speak.
Well, dude, thanks for coming. Is there
yeah.
anything else you want to say about this? It's the Books of Sex at Dawn.
No, nothing I'd like to say. What?
I don't want to keep you too long, but I find it so interesting.
Yeah.
Because there is so much of that, maybe I guess it's that British, it's not Christian, stuff that's just holding us back from just
yeah.
being who we want to be.
Yeah, I mean, if there's no victim, how is yeah. there a crime? You know, that's the thing. If two people want to, whatever their sex life is, if nobody's getting hurt, how is it anybody's fucking business?
You know what I found really interesting?
When I
stopped being monogamous, when I stopped, I was like, I'm done with that. And I would tell girls, not the ones I was trying to hook up with friends, like my friends' wives that I'm friendly with, things like that. There was a lot of anger that came at me from females.
Oh.
And I'm like, this doesn't even concern you. And it was just like, oh, well, you're abusing her. I'm like, I'm not abusing her. I tell her everything, and she's happy to go, and she does go and sleep with other people.
Right.
But it was just, I don't know what that was.
Well, you're undermining the market, right? That's the slut shaming is the same thing. A woman who gives sex away is undermining women who need to barter with it.
Yeah.
Right? So,
So it's ruining with how they would derive worth?
From their sexuality.
Yeah.
You know, the point of the TED Talk that I just gave is that this idea that humans have always bartered around sex, that men and women are locked in this war of the sexes where men are, you know, offering protection, status, food, whatever, in exchange for fidelity, that's not human nature. That's an economic institution that came about after agriculture.
After agriculture.
Yeah, right. Which is just 10,000 years ago, which is like 5% of our existence as a modern species.
And so all the other time we were not...
Right, all the other... Had nothing people to do with us. Were having sex because they wanted to, because it felt good, So the idea that this economic thing is built into human nature is bullshit. Now, that's not to say I don't have sympathy for women who are in that situation, because as we said earlier, in most societies, women are in that situation where the only way they survive is to barter their fidelity for something, for stability, right? But anyway, the point being, when women give sex away, they undermine that market. They destabilize the market. And so women who are
supply and demand
threatened by that are women who are saying, hey, yeah, you know, how can I sell my sexuality for a house and support?
If you're right there giving it away.
Just out there giving it away, yeah.
Yeah, it's like when a house forecloses and you're trying to sell your house for its market value, and the next door house, some bank just trying to give it away, and it's built the exact same. You're like, how are we going to do $400,000 when that one's $200,000?
That's it, yeah. So
that's why they were getting all mad. It's because it took away their value.
Yeah, even if they don't really understand that, but it is threatening, and it's a legitimate threat. You know, until we create a world in which women don't have to think in those terms,
right?
You know,
how far away do you think we are from creating a world like that? How long do you think we'll be stuck in this?
I think we're very close in terms of sexual politics, but I think we're pretty far away in terms of our economic politics in this country.
For women being able to earn the same for the same job and being able to,
not only earn the same, but have a significant level of social support, so that women can legitimately not worry about using sex to get a partner who's going to help them raise kids.
Right.
So if we live, I think someplace like Canada or Sweden or Denmark is much further along in that respect.
That friend of mine who gives those talks to girls' leadership stuff, she just had a baby on her own.
Oh, yeah.
She broke up with her girlfriend and said, okay, I can't. I'm, you know, almost 40, and I have money. Why should I not be able to have a kid?
Right.
And so she just did. She just went and got knocked up by a bottle.
And by a bottle?
By I don't know. Turkey baster or whatever.
She didn't ask you?
She did not ask me, no.
No. Were you hurt?
I was not hurt by it at all, no. I was one of the last boys she had made out with, so I was okay just being that back in high school. But yeah, she was just like, well, why do I need a man to be here with me?
Right.
I guess it would be to support me, but I don't need that.
Right.
So then, it's just a new way of thinking, it seems.
Yeah. Yeah, well, new, but also ancient.
Yeah.
You know, because I think that's how we evolved. And so I always tell guys when I do presentations in colleges or whatever, I say, like, look, dudes, if you want to get laid more, the first thing you need to do is make sure all the women in your life feel respected, safe, and secure, right? Because that relaxation opens up female sexuality.
So every time you call somebody a slut, that just hurts all of us.
You're shooting yourself
in
the foot.
Hurts our chances of getting laid for anybody.
Exactly. Why would you shame someone for doing what it is you wish women would do more of?
Yeah.
That's fucking stupid.
Well, what is that? Why do they shame them for that?
Because they're idiots. You know, because they do what the society tells them to do without thinking it through, which is what most people do. You know, we don't...
I found somebody pointed this out, and I found it to be true. If a woman will get sort of cunty with a woman you're sitting next to, it's because she's trying to show dominance over that woman. Yeah. She's interested in you in a sexual way.
Yeah.
If they're just sitting there with your wife or whoever, and somebody comes like, oh, you're Chris Ryan, I read your book, it's great. It's like, oh yeah, nice dress or whatever. It's just like they're showing all they have to show. That they want to be in that seat next to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's just like animal behavior.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we just have to decide what kind of animal we're going to be, you know? Chimp or that's bonobo. Nice. That's the trick. You know, we're equidistant to chimps and bonobos. And they're more closely related to us than they are to any other primate.
What?
Chimps and bonobos. And bonobos. So, okay. In other words, if you go to the zoo, do you know about bonobos?
Not much.
Okay. Well, we can do this again when you've read this book, because okay. It's going to change your life, all right? Bonobos and chimps are like, imagine if I've got twin brothers.
Yeah.
Okay? They're very closely related to each other. That's the chimp and bonobo. But then they're both equally related to me, right?
From each other. Okay.
Well, to me, because they're both my brother, right? They're twins, right. So they're closer to each other than they are
to me.
But
they're both equally related to
me. But then
okay.
They're equally related to me. That's the relationship we have with chimps and bonobos. They're more closely related to us than they are to gorillas or wow. orangutans or anything, right? In fact, they're more closely related to us.
Closely related in terms of what?
DNA. Okay. Shared DNA and last common ancestor, which sort of amounts to the same thing. They're more closely related to us than the Indian elephant is to the African elephant. Okay, so very close biological relationship.
Wow.
Now, what's interesting is that chimps are kind of assholes. They're male-dominated, aggressive, very hierarchical, kind of violent, pretty dangerous, murder, rape, infanticide, war between groups, all sorts of nastiness. Whereas bonobos are female-dominated, very peaceful, super highly sexual.
Huh.
And have never, in 50 years of scientific observation, both in the wild and in captivity, have never been observed even once for one bonobo to kill another bonobo. No rape, no infanticide. If groups meet each other in the jungle, they
get along.
Fuck.
Wow, really?
Yeah. Franz De Waal, the great primatologist, says chimps use violence to get sex. Bonobos use sex to avoid violence. So they have these sort of diametrically opposed approaches to life, and they're both our closest relatives. So when we talk about animal instincts, it's like, well, you're going to be a chimp, you're going to be a bonobo.
There's
which way are you going to go about this?
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like the bonobo is a way more peaceful, fun way to live.
Very low stress. Everybody's happy.
But they're both possible scenarios for us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
They're both relevant, equally relevant animal models. So, yeah. But it's interesting because when you read about, you know, the primate origins of anything, you'll always read about chimps. But
yeah.
They never mention the fucking bonobos.
Why? Is it newer?
Because it doesn't support the argument that humans are inherently warlike, nasty bastards, which is the dominant social myth, because then that's what we call the neo-Hobbesian argument, because then that justifies the presence of the state and the church and all these institutions
right.
that have to control us to stop us from ripping each other apart. That's the chimp model. If you go to the bonobo model and say, wait, if we all just had like relaxed, open, friendly sex, we wouldn't be ripping each other apart anyway.
Yeah, but a lot of people would say, well, that's ridiculous, though. It's like, well, don't just jump off and say it's ridiculous. Tell me why it's ridiculous.
Right. Right. And read our damn book.
Yeah.
Because then you'll see there are lots of societies that do function more or less along those terms, and they do fine until the chimp society shows up and kills everybody.
And then it's like, well, it doesn't work if you have the other society coming into it.
Well, but that, you know,
raping and pillaging.
That's a different argument. If you say dominance is inherently superior, you know, then you're saying like bigger dudes are better than smaller dudes.
Yeah, whenever I see that at a bar or a comedy club, I'm like, let's go outside and we'll see who's like, why would that be the way we show who's
right,
who has more value?
Why don't we just like, you know, play Trivial Pursuit?
Yeah, none of us respect that. We all decide like intelligence is respected. Yeah, so why are we now going to like punch?
Let's go outside and play some chess, asshole.
Yeah.
What do you say?
You bring it. I get black. Yeah, that's never done. Yeah, Nietzsche said the biggest problem with philosophy of his time was that people went in to thinking something with a thought and they would try to prove it.
Right.
Instead of going like, well, I don't know how to think. So in terms of applying that to the monkeys, they'd be like, well, okay, this society is right, so let's look at the chimps. Like, what about bonobos? Like, no, let's just look at the chimps.
Yeah.
It'll prove all we need to.
Right, right. Yeah, ignore the evidence that doesn't fit your argument. And that's, we all do that to some extent.
Yeah, we all do.
Yeah. That's why when I give a presentation, I always start by, like, putting my bias on the table. You know, it's like, okay, here's my bias, right? Here's,
yeah.
Here's the way I
It's hard to put those down.
To view things.
It's hard to, like, say, this is my bias, so let me. I'm not being completely honest with myself. Because of this bias, let me try to ignore
yeah,
it.
Yeah, but, you know, I think you're being more honest with yourself if you accept the fact that you do have a bias.
One. Yeah.
You know, so at least you're making a gesture toward it, you know?
Look, black people are the same as us, but you shouldn't be in our neighborhoods. That's a whole nother, come on. maybe you should appreciate that you might be biased.
Yeah, yeah. Spike Lee.
Did you see that Mike Tyson one-man show?
No.
Everybody's talking about it. Oh. Spike Lee directed it. Mike
oh,
Tyson
really?
Did it about his life. People were saying it was pretty good.
Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of birds, a stretch limo has just pulled up on Sunset Boulevard. Who's going to get out?
I used to be so enamored by
who's
limos
gonna get out?
when they came up here. And I was like, who do you think it is? And the manager was like, someone with $50.
Yeah, exactly. Some, like, prom.
Yeah, it doesn't. It's not what it was.
Yeah, it looks like nobody's going to get
out.
Getting out.
They're just doing parking. A really, really expensive tour. Just take me to the spots.
All right, man. Well, yeah. Thank you. This is
I'll
a
read
memorable
this, and then
Hollywood
in 9
experience.
When I finally finish, I'm such a slow reader.
When you have a baby.
Yeah. Whoa, what a catch.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. The sex of dawn, and you wrote it with who's Shakilda Jetha?
Casilda Jetha is my wife.
So off on both.
My co-author and wife.
Oh wow.
Yeah. But you did pretty well, actually. I did an interview once where the guy said, Sausalito.
Sausalito? How that's not even justified yeah. by the
nowhere near it, yeah.
What is Sausalito? A flavor of something?
Sausalito's a town near San Francisco.
Oh, it's one of those cookies. Pepperidge Farm cookie. That's probably all where right. it's from or something.
All right. Chunky. Yeah. Chunky Sausalito.
Yeah, well, pick up the book, everybody. I'll do an outro and stuff and say where it is. And use my Amazon link on my website to get it.
There
it's
you
on
go.
Amazon?
It's everywhere, yeah. It's on Perfect. Amazon. And if people want to check it out, like I've got a ChrisRyanPhD.com.
ChrisRyanPhD.com.
It's like my site. And then there's SexAtDawn.com, which has excerpts from the book and reviews and interviews. And
what is that forum you set up for people to talk to?
Oh, Kotango. Kotango. It's still in beta. And so it's free. Anybody who's in there before we go, you know.
To a pay site?
Yeah. We'll have lifelong free membership.
Really?
Yeah, nice. And it's pretty cool. We got like 4,000 or 5,000 people in there now.
And everyone's just talking. It's just a form of people
just
to talk.
You know,
say,
some people hook up and get laid, you know. But it's kind of like a dating site, but I think a lot of the people who are in there aren't necessarily intending to date.
They just want information.
They just want to talk and explore this material and find community.
That's the best thing about the internet is that you think it's just you're suffering from this or something happened. You realize like, oh, there's a bunch of people that suffer from this.
Right.
I had a girlfriend who passed out on weed once. She smoked 2 hits and then just passed. She fell over at a movie theater.
Low blood pressure.
And I made fun of her. Yeah. But online, you're like, oh, there's thousands of people that this has happened to.
Yeah. And you got to be careful. I mean, weed, you know, people think weed, before I got into sex, I was into drugs. That was my thing. I mean, not into it in a criminal way necessarily, but I researched ethnobotany. I went all over the world researching the way cultures interacted with sacred plants and stuff. And I've been cultivating marijuana for a long time. In Spain, it's legal.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right. Possible place to move.
But, yeah, you know, people talk about weed as if it's one thing, but there are very different types of weed.
Yeah.
You know, just sativa indica are very different.
And even in those, they do such different things.
There are all sorts of hybrids. The strongest weed I've had in a long time was when Joe Rogan passed me a joint when I was on his podcast, and I was like semi-conscious for the first half hour.
I've been there too. I called him a devil once for like 2 years because I'm like, stay away from me with that shit, man.
Yeah, yeah, no.
Yeah, LA has the strongest weed in, well, maybe San Francisco in the world.
Yeah, Amsterdam's pretty good too.
I want to do a taste test. I want to go to Amsterdam and see what it's like. See what the difference is in LA weeds. And
you want to hear a funny weed story?
Sure.
All right. We keep saying this is over, but I'll tell one weed story. So I was in Vietnam with Casilda, my wife. We did a year backpacking around Asia. And so we're in we're in Hanoi in North Vietnam, well, the northern part of Vietnam, and we were going to, the next day we were going to do a tour in Hao Long Bay, which is this amazing bay. You've seen pictures, I'm sure. There are these like very vertical islands coming out of this bay, these limestone islands. It's like typical National Geographic photography kind of place. Beautiful place. And so we wanted to get some weed to be stoned when we did this,
fuck yeah,
this boat ride, right? But it's really hard to find weed in Vietnam. And whatever you find is going to be like the kind of shit that you're too young to remember, but like the shit you would get in like 1976 full of seeds and stems, uh-huh, and you'd have to like, you know, clean it on a double album, you know, Layla, Derek and the Dominoes was my favorite. Like the really bad stuff with like, yeah, stones in it and, you know, terrible. So anyway, so we had a friend who was living in Vietnam, and he was going to go try to score us some stuff. He knew a guy in a bar or something. And so we were having dinner with him and his wife. And his wife was this, well, he and his wife were in the midst of getting divorced, essentially. So they were not happy, and they were having a bad time. So after dinner, we had enough of their shit, and we were like, look, you guys go to the bar. We're going to take a walk. You know, we'll see you tomorrow, whatever. Yeah. And so they take off. We're walking around, and we walk by this restaurant, this Italian restaurant, with, you know, tables outside. We're walking by, and there's this guy sitting there eating by himself, a Western guy, and he's got a really nice batik shirt on.
Yeah.
And so I say, hey, nice shirt, man. He says, oh, thanks. My African girlfriend made it for me. I said, oh, she's African. My wife is African. He's like, oh, really? What part of Africa? Blah. We start talking. And he says, you guys want to join me for some wine? I got this bottle of wine.
It's amazing like, meeting people, okay, when you're out of the cool country.
Yeah, I love traveling.
Yeah.
So we sit down with this guy. We start talking. And he says, so what do you do in Barcelona? And I said, well, you know, I do this, that. I don't know. I grow some grass on my terrace. And, you know, sort of joking, right? And he says, oh, really? Where'd you learn to grow? Oh, I learned from books. And then he says, you ever read a book by a guy named, what's his name now? No, it's, I hate when that happens. Anyway, he says his name. I never heard of him, right? So, no, I never. Okay, well, whatever. So then we keep talking. Turns out he's this guy, right, who wrote the Encyclopedia of Hashish, and he wrote another book called Marijuana Botany.
Really?
He's one of the world's experts.
And you happen
marijuana.
To bring up, I grow a little weed.
And I happen to bring it up, right. And we knew a lot of the same people, and he's like, I said, that's amazing, you know, that we meet you, because our friend is trying to score some weed in this bar. And he's like, well, actually, I'm flying to Amsterdam tomorrow to be a judge in the Cannabis Cup competition. And I've got a golf ball size piece of Nepali hash in my room. If you guys want it, you're welcome to it.
Done with these,
I was just going to flush it down the toilet. I was like, are
whoa,
you fucking kidding me?
Like, score.
Seriously? No,
Jesus.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that is the best thing.
Yeah. So, Clark. Robert Clark is his
name. That was his
name? Robert Clark, yeah.
That's,
yeah,
amazing.
Yeah. So I'm still friends with the guy. That was like 10 years ago or something.
I was in a are you really? That's, yeah, really cool. I was in a casino, playing a casino with Rogan in, I think it was Edmonton. And a fan, he grew something purple. I forget what it was.
Purple haze?
It was purple something. I forget. Maybe purple bubble gum.
Yeah,
yeah. And he goes, I want you to have some. And people give me weed, and it's great. And I was like, sure. But he gave me an ounce. And I was like, dude, I'm leaving tomorrow morning. Like, this is not, I can't. But he's like, no, I want you to have it. And I was like, I literally can't. If I tried my hardest, I could not get through this. And he goes, please. He just kept pushing on me for like 15 minutes. And eventually I realized, like a lot of fans, they really just want you to have their stuff.
Right.
So I was like, okay, sure, thanks. I really needed a pinch of it. That's it.
Yeah.
And so I'm walking through this casino back to my hotel room. And these three, like, 16-year-old girls walk by. And they were like, do you know where we can get any weed? And I was like, bam! Enjoy your life. Here's an ounce. Yeah. And they were
God
like, what?
God is smiling on,
yeah,
you.
It was perfect. It was,
wow,
perfect. Like,
wow. Nice. Pay it forward.
Yeah. I'm not going to need it anyway. I was like, just give me a little bit. And the rest is yours. Well, thanks, Chris Ryan.
Yeah.
And
it's fun.
Casilda, say it again.
Casilda Jetta.
Fuck.
She's the interesting one, but she doesn't do interviews in English.
Oh,
English,
really?
Is her sixth language. Don't you hate that?
How do you guys get along?
How do we get along?
Like, how do you...
Oh, we speak in English, mostly. Sometimes in Spanish. But, yeah, she speaks Portuguese, French, Italian, Spanish, Catalan, English.
Whoa.
Yeah.
She seems intelligent.
She's very intelligent. She's a medical doctor, psychiatrist, worked 7 years in Africa in the bush, driving from village to village in a pickup truck with some medical supplies in the back, treating everything.
Wow.
She's done everything in a war zone. She's a
she won't give,
hero.
She won't do interviews in English?
She doesn't like to do interviews at all because she's a private person and she likes to keep her work very separate from her private life, you know, as a psychiatrist.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So when she didn't even want to be co-author of the book, but when I proposed it to her, the only way I could convince her was she said, the condition is I never do interviews. I said, all right, I'll do all the media stuff. And she was like, all right, fine.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's kind of refreshing, especially from being in Hollywood. Somebody wants less credit.
She's no Hollywood type. She's in Topanga right now, enjoying nature.
She like it out here?
Yeah, she likes it. All right. Topanga's nice.
Yeah.
It's not Hollywood. It's pretty
cool. There's a different part of Southern California that's just in this.
Yeah.
This comedy store is like an oasis.
I've never been here.
Really?
Yeah, no, I've never been to a show here. In fact, I saw Sarah Silverman down, I don't know what the other one is down there.
Improv?
It's really small. I don't know if it was, anyway, she did a benefit for a congressman a few months ago, just before the election. That was the first time I'd been in a comedy club in
LA. Oh, really?
I mean, I used to hang out with Richard Belzer's brother in New York.
Yeah.
So he and I used to go to comedy clubs in New York a lot. Because he got in free everywhere.
Dude, this place is it's not like, it's mostly a hangout here. That bar is open, everyone's drinking, hanging out, people smoke reefer in the back.
Oh, yeah?
It's just a chill,
like
fun. And then you go on and watch for comedy for an hour or something, then come back out and talk.
What's a typical cover?
Whenever you want, just let me know. It costs us nothing to get people on the list. It's totally fine.
Great. Yeah, we'll come down one night. Because, hey, we're in the capital, right? This is where it happens. Yeah,
if you want, I mean, I'm gone this week. I mean, if you want, Duncan can probably, you're friends with him too, right?
Yeah.
He can just call in and we just have an excuse to come and just hang out.
Cool.
It's fun. We go in the back and we just smoke pot and we just sort of hotbox a room and stay there for like 30 minutes. And we know a grower that hangs out here.
Uh-huh.
And so he'll just keep rolling up joints and passing them around. He's like, what? Another one? And then you just get like,
it's like high school.
Yeah.
Somebody put on some Pink Floyd.
Eventually somebody says like, well, enough. And we all realize like, yeah. Enough. Stop rolling these. Yeah.
All right. Well, hey.
Thanks, man.
I want to get you on my podcast sometime.
Do one? Sure.
Yeah, I do one because Duncan convinced me to do one.
Really?
And now I've got, like, I'm on my 21st episode is going up tomorrow.
Neato.
Yeah. It's called Tangentially Speaking.
Tangentially Speaking.
Yeah.
And it's on iTunes.
iTunes and at feralaudio.com.
Oh, you're on there?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. There's a lot of good podcasts on Feral Audio.
Yeah.
What's your Twitter address?
At Chris Ryan, PhD.
Spelled the regular way, CHRIS. At Chris Ryan, PhD. Are you on there a lot, Twitter?
Yeah, more than I should be.
Yeah, and you got a website? You already said that.
ChrisRyanPhD.com and SexEdDawn.com.
I always try to like promote people, but I never remember
that shit. Yeah, I know. You don't have any sponsors?
I have Amazon. That's why I like
your
to
affiliate
do that.
Link. Yeah.
Yeah, and then I have another one coming, but they're not there yet.
You should get Sure Design T-shirts. Duncan, they sponsor Duncan.
And they make his t-shirts for
him? And they're doing mine now, too.
Really?
Yeah, and they're cool. They're good shirts, and the guy's super cool.
You should have a t-shirt that says, it's not bad, just stick it in. And then show a vagina and a penis right next to each other with another vagina. And maybe that other vagina will have a thought bubble saying, it's cool, I'm okay with it.
It's cool, yeah, okay.
That sounds a little, that probably won't work as a t-shirt.
No.
Now that I say it out loud.
Yeah, I don't think, I think in concept.
What t-shirts
not a
do you make?
Well, we've got a Sex at Dawn t-shirt.
Okay.
We sold out of the first batch, which wasn't with Shore Designs. I did them somewhere else. The first batch said, wake up to Sex at Dawn.
Where did the title come from? Was that a... I'll read the book and find out.
You know, it's the dawn of man, the dawn of civilization, and also morning wood.
Yeah. It's the best. You're just like, hey, I'm ready to go. You don't have to say anything or even...
Yeah. You know, you get about 5 erections every night while
you
sleep.
As you sleep.
Yeah.
I remember that from sexuality class.
Yeah.
All right, rad, man.
Nice talking to you.
You too.
Let's do it again.
Cool.
Bye.
Climbing up on Salisbury Hill, light. Wind was blowing, time stood still. Eagle flew out of the night. He was something to observe. Came in close, I heard a voice.
Thank you, everybody. That was the episode. I remember the last thing I wanted to say in the introduction that I didn't. April 7th, I am doing a talk with the noobs. I'm doing a noobs talk. And I'm doing a Reddit AMA on this Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific and 2 p.m. Eastern. I'm doing an AMA. So if you go on Reddit.com, you can ask me anything. That's what AMA stands for, and I'll just answer everybody for like 3 hours. So you can go on there. But April 7th, I'm doing a talk with all the newbie comics at the Comedy Store. I think that's who I relate to most in terms of development of, as a comedian, as a fucking guy who doesn't have anything going for him and is just starting and no one told him the fucking deal. So I'm telling everybody the deal. It'll be... Can you hear this? Oh, this lady is losing it. It's so great. She's railing against some people trying to find a parking space. She's wearing sweatpants, a shitty small tank top with spaghetti straps, and Joe Boxers hanging out. And she is pissed. I'm waiting for them to find a parking spot. Man, that accent doesn't come out, just like all my accents. What was I saying? Oh, so April 7th, probably at 3 p.m. We're going to try to do it in the main room at the Comedy Store. And I'm just going to tell you what I feel like no one ever told me when I was starting. And then if you have any questions at all, come with them. Don't ask me for the sake of being heard, but ask me if you like really don't understand something in Hollywood, if you've been through something at all and have any question. Everyone else will benefit from your questions. So everybody show up at 3 p.m. If they don't let us do it inside, hopefully it'll be a nice day. We'll do it out in the parking lot. But the acoustics will be better in the main room. And some people have asked me to record these and put them up for new comics like around the country. And I don't want to be on like the record for that. I'm not like, this is just my opinions that I'm going to put out. I don't want it to be like I'm taking credit for, I don't know. It seems douchey. That's what it is. It seems douchey to be the one in charge of saying, hey, look at me. I have what's right to say for everybody, but I really do think I can help you guys through a lot of stuff, but I don't think I'm going to record it. Because then also I'll be worried about every single word I say, and really I just want to give you guys the real deal. So seriously, any questions you have, come with those. I'll cover some of the basics, and then we'll just move from there, and then maybe that'll spark my mind to say some other things too. So April 7th at the store, that's a Sunday, so if you're there to sign up for the open mic, you can just come a little early. We can do it. I don't know how long it'll take, probably a couple hours, and then you can, you know, sign up for the potluck. Nobody ever fucking told us shit when we started. It's not like medical school. You're just coasting. You don't know anything. You don't know if you should like be sending out headshots and video. Like, there's no. And some of the stuff I have to tell you, by the way, if you guys come, it's not going to be as relevant. They always told us like, oh, look at Rodney Dangerfield. He made it past 60. Yeah, fucking 40 years ago. Some of the stuff people tell you ain't relevant at all. There's a story of that guy from Mad Men of the People. Probably wants to be known for more than that. Dabney Coleman. And who went into a read for Steven Spielberg. This is what they always told us in acting class. And he went for this audition. And he's going all over town. And he was just going in and just telling the casting directors that he wasn't interested in taking the job. That he didn't really like the role and he wasn't interested. He would go in to tell them that. The gall of this guy. To go in and tell them that. Why even go in? Just say, I don't want to take the audition. But he would go in, take the audition. Steven Spielberg caught wind of this. Went either that or I forget, or if he actually did it for one of Steven Spielberg's movies. And he's like, who is this motherfucker turning people down left and right who doesn't have any credits? And he called him in, and that's how he ended up getting that Alien movie, the first one that Spielberg did, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, or Jaws, I forget. The story works the same either way, but that doesn't work in today's day and age. That would never work. The casting director would call your agent. First of all, you wouldn't get an audition unless you had an agent. The casting director would call your agent and be like, what the fuck was that? I'm never bringing that guy in again. And that would be the end of it. Your agent would stop sending you out. One more time it would happen, and then he would stop sending you out. So, not everything that I've done is relevant to what you guys are going to do, but I can sort of see the mistakes a lot of you are making and what some of you are doing right. I've seen trends. I've been here long enough. I've seen who's made it and who hasn't and what they've done right. So I know a little bit, and I'm glad to help you guys through it, because it's fucking impossible to get started and have no fucking clue. I'm convinced there are so many top-level comedians that never got anywhere, that are out of the business that you've never heard of, but would have been fucking greats, except nobody gave them any guidance. Jim Painter was one of our favorite comics. He's one of the most influential comics of anyone that started with me. Me, Steve Simone, Steve Renazzisi. Who else? Man, he was like the guy that we all looked up to. And we all modeled Tom McCaffrey, Matt Fulcheron, Larson. All these guys looked up to him. Fuck, he was good. And he's gone. He's out of comedy. Anyway. So yeah, I'll do that. April 7th. 3, maybe 4 o'clock, but probably, let's just say 3, right? I mean, everyone will be up by then. Read as me. I will be up by then. Whew, I'm still high off this thing. Auntie Dolores, I'm telling you guys. So thank you very much for Chris Ryan for coming in. Coming to meet me at the Comedy Store. You were worried about that it wouldn't sound okay. It sounded pretty good, right? The only problem was that banging. That banging that those guys were doing. It was just, it's sharp noises that have a problem with this. With this recording stuff. Like phones ringing in the background. Stuff like that annoy people. If chewing annoys you, I don't know what to tell you. Chewing is a part of life. It's me chewing. Unfocused, man. Unfocused, because you don't have the edible in you. So, all right, let me do one sponsorship really quickly. If you go to Gamefly, don't forget to go to Gamefly. Not Gamefly. Well, yeah, Gamefly if you want through my website. It's right there. But do your Amazon shopping is what I meant to say. Don't forget to help me out and do all your Amazon shopping through my website. There's a link on there for Amazon.com and then another one, a little one right next to it for Amazon.ca for all my Canadian friends. I got a good interview there with a cleaned up heavy junkie. I got one with like a lighter guy with like a kid, and then I got one with like a real heavy one that was good. And I gave him $50. The $50 comes from you guys doing your shopping through my Amazon link on my website. So just do all your shopping as is, but instead of going straight to Amazon, go to arithegreat.com, then go to Amazon. There's a link right that takes you to Amazon, then whatever you get, I get like 5 or 6% cash back from them, from their end. Maybe it's off their commission. It's got to be off their commission, although they'd be way higher. So yeah, keep doing that. If you've done it, thank you. And if you've gotten my special, thank you. And if you haven't yet, fucking pick it up. And if you've gotten it and you listen to it, you get 5... You can pay with PayPal, by the way, but or credit card. But you get 5 HD downloads, and you get 5 streams, and you get 5 standard definition downloads. So you get 15 different ways to watch it. So once you've watched it a few times, you can send one of those to your friends. So do that. If you have extra ones, don't let them go to waste. Send it to a friend. Let them fucking watch it. Spread the word. I just want people seeing it. But you can get all that stuff at chill.com. You can get Doug Benson's special there too now. Tom Rhodes' special there. Maria Bamford's special. Oh, Doug Benson isn't special. It's a documentary. The highest movie ever ruled. Greatest movie ever ruled. Sorry, I put in too many weed references into his weed reference based documentary. The greatest movie ever ruled. So get that. And then if you get stuff from me, get like the fan package. Get my CD. Get a grinder. Get a t-shirt. Those chill t-shirts. Those passive-aggressive t-shirts and posters are pretty fucking cool. It's got this ye olde dragon that I really like. And the glow-in-the-dark shirts. And they're coming out with a new poster, too, that Scott Maupin made. That's really cool. I don't know if that's out yet. Hopefully it is. That's a really cool one, too. We'll pull that as a t-shirt or a poster. But it's fucking cool. Maybe a shirt. Oh, it works cool as a shirt. It's all these people with like a straight, dead face. Or smiling, that's what it is. All these cool, weird circles smiling. And then one dude with just like dead, normal face looking out of a crowd. And then it says passive-aggressive at the bottom. I liked it a lot. All right, you guys, that's it for this episode. Chris Ryan, I'm going to go on his podcast soon. What a cool guy that is. I want him to come smoke pot at the Comedy Store with us. I think he'd enjoy it. Check out his TED Talk online. You definitely should look at that. And that's it. Subscribe to these. And thank you guys for tuning in. And thank you guys for listening to my special if you already have. And thank you for, I don't know, whatever. For not killing yourself. All right, you guys. My thoughts on the thing. So, yeah, it's really kind of freeing to know that a lot of other cultures don't have this fucking societal pressure for them to pair up. I'm sort of done with it. I don't know if it's just because I'm in a place where it's like I don't have to, but I just sort of like small interactions with people. I talked to my friend, say your name or not, but anyway, I have a girl I see in Vancouver sometimes, and she's got a boyfriend now, but I still saw her, and of course I still asked. It's like, hey, why don't you come out to my room? But like, it was still cool to see her. I could hang out with her as friends because I've developed a small friendship over years of fucking. And those are nice. I enjoy those, and I'm not going to stop having those. And those come from me having sex here or there, not matching up with one person. And yeah, can I just make friends with somebody who I'm not having sex with? Yeah, I could. But what do they have to entice me to? I like being alone. I get weirder on strangers. So, you know, that helps entice me to like learn. And some of the people that I've met like that, I haven't become friends with, and they've annoyed me. And that's fine too. But at least I can have fun experiences. Why would I not have experiences? I guess it's not for everybody. Everyone has their own thing. I was talking to Simone about this. What is going off? Oh, it's my ringer. That he's like, he wants a monogamous relationship. He wants to find a girl to settle down with and have a family and kids. And I super do not want a family and kids. And those are both okay. There's pros and cons to each one, and everyone has like a higher, you put a larger amount of like emphasis, and that's the wrong word, premium. You put a higher premium on certain things and a lower premium on other things. Found the right word. Fuck yeah. Maryland education coming back. So let's say like when people like this is what when Brian Redband, my friend Redband, Brian Reichel, he moved to LA and Joe Rogan told him to move out to Calabasas near where he was living at the time. Cause he was like, you don't want to be around all those people. And he lived in Calabasas for a while. And then he moved eventually to Burbank where more people were. And it was like, yeah, you should just ask Rogan. When people give this advice, it's always usually based on what they want. And I'm like, if you ask me, I would say live in the center of fucking Hollywood. Because I want to be around the action. Rogan wants to be away from all of it. And Redband wanted something in the middle. He lives in Burbank. He loves it there. So it's like you ask people why they think a particular thing. And then you get a better understanding of what you can use and what you can't use. You know, if somebody's like, oh, no, definitely live in Calabasas. And I'm like, why? It's like, oh, because it's away from everybody. It's like, oh, I want to be in the action. I'm moving to New York City for that. To be around stimuli. I tried to say stimulus is, and then I changed to stimuli. So yeah, it depends what you want. But other people, you know, super don't want it. So with relationships too, I guess it's what you want. But just know how much of that is being pushed on you by this societal, these norms that you were brought up on that aren't really in you. I still do it where I feel like the only reason I don't get a vasectomy is because I worry about like, what if I change my mind? Like so many people I know have changed their minds. I'm not different than them. I'm not better than any of them. So what if I change my mind too? But man, if I get somebody pregnant now, it'll only be a negative. It will not be the right way to do it. The odds of that happening are way higher than the odds of me finding somebody and wanting a family. I should get a vasectomy. Laziness is involved too. That plays a big part. Making the appointment, going down and doing it. That plays a way larger part. Me not doing it is laziness. And me worried about still wanting to do it. Let's be honest with yourself, Ari. So anyway, thank you, Chris Ryan. I think this is a very interesting discussion. I want to have him on again and talk about specifics. In fact, if you guys have questions, I got to start a form spring. But please send them to me. Entitle Questions for Chris Ryan. And maybe I'll have him on the next time and use that as like a template for like what other specifics I want to know, to follow-ups and more specific. I don't know. And if you have questions in general for me or whatever, or comments, write to me at contact@arithegreat.com. And I will read them. I respond to like 2% of them, but I read all of them. And that's it. All right. Don't forget to get the special. Talk to you later. Until next week, bye. And I will put up soon, what's it called? A how-to on how to do these. My friend Big J, my other friend Big J. I have a second friend named Big J. Yeah, he was asking me. So I'll do a whole podcast just for comics on how to do these podcasts. And fuck, I put off a thought, and then the pot made it go away. The last thought, nah, fuck, who cares? We're done, right? All right, I'll see you guys later. I guess this intro and outro was sponsored by Auntie Dolores for keeping me off track. Get him at fine dispensaries everywhere. I'll talk to you guys later. Bye. Oh, yeah, keep April 9th open, seriously, for my storyteller shows. Oh, I know also. The last thing, for the heavy listeners that are still the loyal guys that are still listening at the end like this. Well, I just lost a thought. Oh, I'm going to do this for Holocaust Memorial Day. I'm going to repost a podcast that I did on the old Death Squad Network with my father about his Holocaust experience. But it falls out on a Monday this year, and I feel like a lot of people have not watched it because it's not part of this iTunes feed, or have not listened to it because it's not a part of this iTunes feed. So if you get a double up, if you already listened to it, I'm sorry. Take it out of my bank of extra ones that I've done on midweeks. But I think it's the right time for it, and I want people to have heard it. So, all right, that's it, you guys. Episode 108. I'm pretty positive now, even though I didn't look it up. Monkey Sex. With Chris Ryan, PhD, over and out. And now I'm going to go get a slice of pizza and kick this high into overdrive. I don't know if you guys knew that. When you get an extra slice or something, get a little bit of grease in you, it takes an edible and it kicks it up. The same way a fucking joint will take a mushroom up from like an 8 to a 10. Like Dan Madonia says, this is the joint that's going to kick us in the face. So too, a fucking slice or something on an empty stomach could take an edible into hyperspace. I couldn't think of a better word. All right, you guys. Thank you very much. Chris Ryan, thank you. Follow him on Twitter. Bye. Oh, and what do you guys think of doing like just a mailbag episode of just questions, I guess, about me? So I'll like interview myself, sort of. But you guys ask the questions. I'm definitely got to start a form spring. I have one. I have a form spring. It's either Ari the Great or Ari Shaffir. Yeah, we'll just do a bunch of questions and we'll take that mailbag. I'll find out what it is on the next episode. But yeah, let's do that. Okay. Bye. Gamefly.com. Pearl Flowers. And that's the other one. Amazon. Jesus, I'm high. All right, bye. I see no sign of you. I hope